Broadcasting from deep in the Eublepharis galaxy, on a small planet called Gekonia, east of the Albino Hills and south of the raging Leucistic River, comes the one, the only, Gecko Nation Radio.
All right, everybody, tonight is going to be an incredible show. I've talked to Sean Holliday a few times, and this guy really knows his product, his inventions, and I am extremely impressed with the research and development that he has done in order to bring these products to the community. So tonight's show, we're going to really get into it. He's going to explain it to everyone exactly how he developed these geos and these new products that he's working on. So guys, stay tuned for this one. Now, today is 4/2014, April 20th, and I just want to let everyone know that today the GNR Facebook page hit 2,000 likes. I have spent minimal money advertising that page. I really don't like giving money to Facebook for you guys to see the page. I kind of like things to grow organically, so for the most part, it has grown organically. So I want to thank everybody for liking the Facebook page. I'd like to see a lot more people share it, and so we can reach a more bigger audience, so more people can benefit from what we're doing here on Gecko Nation Radio. Everything we do here on Gecko Nation Radio is to benefit community. I'm very particular about what we talk about, the guests we have on, the people that sponsor the show. I want to keep it as positive as possible, and I want to make sure that it's done for the right reasons, okay? So you can rest assured that people that you're going to hear on this show, products we're going to talk about, topics, they're good, trust me. I've done my homework on a lot of these people and businesses. And I've always said it, you know, when you're in this as long as I have, you find the better people in the community by getting basically screwed over by all the bad ones. But when you go through those experiences are totally worth it, because when you're able to link up with the better businesses and better people, it's a great feeling. Tonight, so you guys know, in the second half of the show, we're going to be doing our contest. Well, it's like a raffle for callers. You guys call in with your questions, and our guest, Sean Holliday, is gracious enough. He's going to be giving one of you, the winner of the raffle, a great care package of his products. I just received one. You guys saw the video in Gecko Nation Group. I'm going to be trying those products out myself. I'd like to be able to endorse them in the future. I like his vision and enthusiasm for these products, and I hope to be able to, give you my opinion on them, okay, after I work with them. The call-in number for the calls is 646-478-5331. And if you want to just call in and not be put into the call queue where I'm going to actually put you on the air, don't press 1 when it's prompted. You can just call that number and just listen, and you won't be put into the call queue. But if you actually call that number and press 1, you're going to show up in my call queue, and I'm going to bring you on the air, so get ready. So if you're afraid to go on the air, if you're, you know, nervous about that, don't press 1. All right? Cool. Next week we have the Caloric FlexWatt episode. All right? It's going to be a great episode. We're going to talk about FlexWatt, what makes it the safest, best, and most energy-efficient heat tape in the world right now, and especially the best for the community. And it is also the heat tape of choice by the best rack manufacturers and reptile supply distributors. All use FlexWatt only. All right. You know it, guys. One of the things about Gecko Nation Radio is it would not be possible without our amazing sponsors. So check them out.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Ron Tremper is the biggest contributor to leopard gecko morph making, known worldwide for his amazing examples of living art. You can now download his Leopard Gecko Care app, his Morph Encyclopedia app called Leopard Gecko Pro, and visit his site, leopardgecko.com, to see where morphs are made.
GiantLeopardGecko.com specializes in giant and super giant leopard geckos with a focus on selectively bred exceptional lines of many different morph combinations, including high-end African fat tails and crested geckos. With over 17 years of experience in herpetoculture, Keith Kiggins brings you quality, integrity, and value. Check out GiantLeopardGecko.com on the web and on Facebook.
Reptiles Express is the absolute best live animal shipping company with great low rates. Debbie is the queen of customer service and will make sure your precious cargo gets to where it needs to. They also have a wide array of shipping supplies from deli cups, snake bags, heat packs, and more. Visit ReptilesExpress.com and become a member today.
And if you're looking for quality food for your dubia roaches, crickets, mealworms, and superworms, look no further than MS2 Premium Insect Chow. Made with reptiles in mind, it contains no dog food, cat food, or chicken mash. Using only vegetable proteins and high-quality ingredients, MS2 Premium Insect Chow will have your feeders making a beeline for it. Contact mstent.weebly.com, or it can also be purchased at Rainbow Mealworms and AB Dragons.
ABDragons.com is your source for the highest quality dubia roaches, whether you're starting a colony of your own or just need feeders for your insect-eating herps. ABDragons.com can't be beat in quality or price. They are also a huge distributor of FlexWatt reptile heat tape and have very competitive pricing. Check out ABDragons.com online and on Facebook.
All right, everybody, and if you didn't notice, we are splitting up our sponsor plugs to keep the plugs a little shorter. So we're going to play some of our sponsors at the beginning of the show, some in the middle, and then all of them at the end. And I basically want to make sure we get more airtime and do the best I can. This is a way we can let other people get in on the sponsor and advertising and also keep the show flowing better. So that's the way things are going to go from now on. I also want to just let everybody know that the Gecko Nation group just hit 1,900 members. I seriously want to thank all the admins and our members for making it one of the best groups on Facebook for geckos and reptiles. The camaraderie in there and the sense of family and everybody getting along so well is something that you just don't see today in a lot of groups out there. So thank you, everybody. And it grows by like 100 new members a week, which is incredible. So if that keeps going on, I mean, I don't know what the max is, but if 100 people a week join that group, I won't be able to keep up with it. I may just have to sell it or something. We'll see. Well, it's kind of like my baby in a way, but it's something you guys all did. I just basically took 5 minutes and made a group, and you guys made it all the best that it is, so thank you. You know, one of the other things that I want to mention about is if you guys are tuning into the show for the first time, and I know I'm going to give a shout-out to Mark. I see Mark in the chat room. Hey, Mark, how's it going? Good talking to you this week. Mark is basically a new hobbyist with leopard geckos and picking up some beautiful ones. And if you're a new hobbyist and you're coming into the world of leopard geckos or geckos and even reptiles now, they're expanding, you got to check out Gecko Forums. It's huge, and it's been there forever. Check this out.
Did you know that since 2006, there's been a treasure trove of history and information on leopard geckos and other species? Well, Gecko Forums is the most extensive database of leopard gecko history on the web right now. Take a look and delve into the past, present, and future of this great community. The biggest contributors, breeders, and hobbyists have left their mark there. Now it's your turn. Look, learn, and post away. Need a place to post animals for sale? Look no further. Visit geckoforums.net and become a member today. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to be the official radio show associated with Gecko Forums.
Herpentime Radio is my inspiration for GNR. Justin and JD do a terrific show every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern and have an amazing archive of shows available for download. Visit them at blogtalkradio.com/herpentime and on Facebook.
All right, everybody. I'm not going to waste any more time. Mr. Sean Holiday of Your Gecko Guy. If you guys are wondering who Your Gecko Guy is, this is Sean. Sean, you are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
How you doing?
Feeling good, Sean. How about you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Oh, absolutely, man. It was great talking to you this week. I'm really impressed with what you have going on and what you've been bringing to the Gecko community as far as incubation goes and your other things that you're expanding into. Let's before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started in herpetoculture and then more specifically into your inventions.
All right. Well, I was actually born and raised in Arizona, and anybody who's been to Arizona knows that there's a wide variety of reptile species that's here. So from a young kid, I was always raised around reptiles. So it was always fun to catch them and place them into a jar or a small enclosure and keep them for a day and then, you know, put them back so you can catch them again. So that's kind of how the bug kind of caught the bug, was just growing up around them. And the gecko thing kind of came after that. Obviously, having them in your backyard was easy. You didn't really have to put them in a tank. So about 2001, I became interested in leopard geckos and kind of started my first colony then. And this is when leucistics and pastels and things of that nature and tangerines were starting to get kind of popular. So that's when I first started our majority of our breeding projects, was kind of originated from those lines. And then from there, we just kind of developed a small colony and collection, and didn't really get too much more of it, just a hobby. And then after a while, my wife, who actually was with me and helped me through care of our collection as well, she's been a big help, mentioned to me, said, hey, maybe we should do a website. And I said, you know, that's a pretty good idea. Let's try it. And from there, that's when it kind of took off for us as far as, like, understanding more about what the hobby was really about and answering questions to people who, you know, emailed you. And you get to learn as you go, as questions you answer. So that's kind of how it started for us. As far as, like, the products go, the question is, for me, was the question behind the question, I guess you can say. The product of incubation has always been tough for any beginner breeder, I think. It's not just about buying a breeding pair of animals, whether they're reptiles or mammals. It's about the care and husbandry of them and how to do it correctly and to make sure that when you're doing it, you do it properly. And throughout all my reading and all the education I've done on the hobby, incubation was touched on quite a bit, but it was never actually, no one ever, from my reading, the depth that they went into it on, there were still questions that were underlining there that I had to get answers for. And that's kind of how we started to design and develop our products, was based around those questions that I asked, not just myself, but other breeders. And when the answers I received were obviously answers that you read in books and stuff like that. So basically incubation median, temperatures, moisture content, hatch ratios, undevelopment of the embryo during the incubation process and things of that nature. So that's what allows us to kind of branch off into the incubation products that we designed and developed.
And you've taken that previous knowledge to a whole new level, like with your own research and development. You've actually expanded, like, I don't know, you've basically taken it, I guess, I don't know what the word is, but it's like an epic advancement compared to where it was, like, that, you know, a lot of the knowledge in the books is great, you know, it's going to get you by, it's going to get you to hatch your geckos, your reptile eggs, but, you know, you're really focusing on, you know, getting those hatch rates up higher and really finding what, you know, what's actually happening during the entire process every step of the way, which, you know, a lot of people don't really look too deep into if they're hatching out their animal, if they're satisfied, you know what I mean? So,
yeah,
you know, it's pretty interesting.
Exactly. So what the question I had for myself was, the questions you're going to ask yourself right now is the incubation medium too wet, is it too dry? So when I started working with, so after 2001, we bred them, you know, just a couple of pairs, and I used to get a couple eggs, and back then it was either vermiculite or perlite. This is kind of the way to do it. And then
right.
We did that for many years, and then 2004, I started looking into the light diffuser, and the light diffusers were used for, back then, for snakes mostly. They weren't really thought of for small, you know, small species, so I said, you know what, I'm going to try it, and I just used straws. So we just took straws and you basically secured them onto the light diffuser and you cut the light diffuser to fit your container. And that's what the new egg trays are basically designed around, was making it easier for people to not have to, you know, basically invent their own products, we went out, and that's how the new reptile egg tray was designed. It's basically based off of those same exact fundamentals that I found as a beginning hobbyist trying to, you know, that's kind of part of our hobby, is being innovative. You know, I mean, if you look at just the enclosure on your standard, you know, Facebook post or your standard thing, it's about being innovative. You'll cut a hole in the side of the container and you'll decorate and redesign the cage or the enclosure. I've always been a firm believer in, you know, having extra furniture in there for these animals to perch on and things of that nature. So as we started to develop these different tools, it was easy to grab something and say, hey, this would be cool for a gecko hide. I mean, I'm sure you've done that, haven't you, Davey? Go through somewhere, this would make a great water dish, or, you know, this would be
don't we all?
A
we
useful
down
tool.
Those aisles where all the plastic,
yeah.
You know, like, you get all happy.
Yeah, you go to the clearance section, you find those ramekins. I remember that. Oh, great, these will make great dishes. So, you know, after doing all those kinds of things and basically using that light diffuser for a while, we came across just average incubation, you know, 80% hatch ratios. Every once in a while, getting the 85 percentile, 90 if you had a great year. But it always fluctuated. And the question I always had, how is it a female can lay, you know, fertile eggs or infertile eggs? Or, you know, these questions arose. And as being a hobbyist, you know, you get 10 eggs a year, you're happy. You don't worry about the three or four you threw away. Well, over time, those three or four started to bug me because I started to see certain attributes that shouldn't have been there. So, you know, it's like, why is it infertile, or why did it go full term and then it didn't hatch? So these are questions that are common still by hobbyists now. And they're answered, you know, by some of the professionals in the field. And I'm, you know, I may be educated on my own product, but there's, you know, there's people who are very educated on the incubation process and may have different results and even different answers than what my research has shown me. But the research that I did was basically on the incubation stage. And right around 2004, we started to understand that the amount of volume that we were doing as far as leopard gecko breeding, I needed a bigger incubator. And I kept upgrading. I had 5-6 herbivators, and then I had 5 or 6 of these, and I had 2 home builds, and then I finally went to a cigar humidor, which is like those double-door refrigerator doors, and I was like, you know, this is perfect. You know, I can fit as many as I can. Well, just like everything else, you know, how hobby expands, and I eventually filled that with cups, and I said, you know, I can't pop lids on 300 cups. And my grandfather is actually an engineer, and we've always kind of pushed back and forth on good ideas, and he's been a contributor to some inventions throughout his career as well. And he said, you know what, let's make you just, you know, a little divider to go in there. I said, you know, let's do that. So we sat down, and again, we kind of talked a little bit about it. It was on an Easter, actually, and it's a true story. This was in 2004, and my son was younger, and it was basically around his birthday, and I said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and get back to the party, but I'm going to come out here tonight and finish this. And then I just posted some pictures to my Facebook of the original geo that night that I designed. And it basically shows just a quick little 6-ounce deli with, I took a soldering iron and basically drilled the aeration holes in the bottom, stuck the walls in there and hot glued them. And that was the original geo that I designed. And I dropped it right inside of a 12-ounce cup. And then he came up. And a couple of days after that, after I sent him pictures, and I said, this is, I think, what we should do. And from there, we started to create the geo and design it from there. And it was designed to basically allow the organization of the egg, because I got tired of using the whole cup for 2 eggs, so because it took up so much room in my incubator.
Yeah, and, you know, I've seen your product out for years now, and I'll be honest, I never really used it. I used it in my first year of breeding leopard geckos, and I'll be honest with you, that first year I was all over the place with what I was doing. And, you know, I just found it easier at the time I didn't have a lot of geckos, so, you know, I just found it easier just to put my eggs in the, you know, the vermiculite or the, I was using perlite at the time. Now I use a mixture of perlite and vermiculite, but I want to really give your product a good go, and I want to thank you for sending me the sample pack, because I want to be able to try it out and, you know, really, really experience it and really be able to give an educated opinion about it. So, you know, and just so everybody knows, we're going to have Sean back in a few months, and by that time I'll have actually hatched out eggs using his inventions. But, Sean, before we continue, we have to go ahead and bring on our news anchor, and here he is, Mr. Steve Barker.
Good evening, Gekkonians.
There he is. What's up, Steve?
What's going on?
Hello, Steve.
Hi, Sean. How you doing?
Good. Nice to meet you, Steve.
Nice to meet you, too.
What you got for us tonight,
bud? All right. All right. We know there's a Gaboon Viper loose in Mount Pleasant, South Carolina.
Well, that's what you're saying.
Right. More evidence has come up. There's been another sighting. In the past 7 days, there was another potential sighting of the Gaboon Viper, and there's still authorities are still telling everyone that supervise their children, stay away from bushes and overgrown areas. So they're still concerned.
Hold on a second. So somebody probably saw a garter snake and said, all right, I saw the Gaboon. It's out here. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, God.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, they're probably going to have several more sightings before too long.
Oh, man. Unbelievable. Did you hear about that story, Sean?
No, actually, I didn't. It's kind of common for people to assume. If they see a snake, they think it's poisonous.
Yeah,
well, this one's a little different.
They're all poisonous. None of them are, actually.
No, they're all. Some of them are venomous. Yeah, I can't believe people still get that mixed up.
Yeah. Well, I've seen that in a lot of articles where they say they're poisonous throughout it.
I know.
Yeah.
All right. Our next story is pretty funny, and it's not exactly reptile-related, but sort of. A carjacker was forced to pull over when a pair of 7-year-old twins leapt into action from the back seat, punching and whipping him into submission. The botched theft occurred in San Antonio, Texas, when an unidentified man approached the home of Lucia Lozada and hopped into the driver's seat of her idling car. Lozada was standing less than 10 feet away from the car as the carjacker threw the car into reverse, peeled out of the driveway, and tore off down the street with her twin sons and 1-year-old brother to the sons. And they were already buckled in. Within the space of 10 minutes, the Lozada twins had managed to convince the carjacker to pull over and drop the boys and their little brother off. They convinced the carjacker with their fists and a toy snake.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
like
one of the this is great. One of the boys was punching the man in the face. The other was hitting him with the rubber snake.
Well, hell yeah, I would too.
Come in.
Yeah. Good kids.
Good kids is right. Yeah, some kids would be. You know, I don't know. Maybe they wouldn't take that opportunity. I guarantee you that carjacker didn't expect that, so that was good.
No.
That's good.
It says, so after about a mile or so of being pummeled by tiny fists and lashed with a rubber reptile, the carjacker finally relented and pulled over. While the carjacker got away, police are confident they will be able to find him as he has been seen before around the neighborhood. I had to read that because, you know, good for those kids.
Yeah, definitely. That's cool.
Yeah.
Good story.
Yeah.
I like that.
He got it with a rubber snake.
There's the tie-in that's reptile-related, folks.
Yeah. All right. Also in Texas, in Longview, police warned residents on the department's Facebook page that a 16-foot Burmese python escaped from its home in Linwood Lane. The snake was described as a tan with brown spots and missing one eye. Residents were urged to call the police and not approach or attempt to capture the snake, but later that evening, Muffin, the 16-foot-long one-eyed snake, had been found, and it was found in the attic of the residence. It never even left the house.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
So it was right in the house the whole time.
That's crazy.
Yep. And that leads us to Africa, where a 4-meter-long albino Burmese python was reported missing from Titan Reptiles in the Oakfield Shopping Center at North Mead in Benani, East Africa. Really, this isn't a very interesting story other than the photo that they show that says underneath a file copy of a baby Burmese python is actually a ball python.
Oh, so, albino ball?
Not even an albino.
Oh,
so,
man.
That's kind of what caught my eye with it.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
Yeah. That happens all the time.
I know. Right. Even, like, I've seen things where the fish and game can't even tell the difference between a python and a boa. I mean, like, we've seen
Are
stuff like that, too.
Animal Planet can't even tell the difference. So, because I've seen so many Burmese python shows on there, and they're showing ball pythons.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, come on. All right. And our next story, a team of German biologists have begun cloning the Paradora pictus, a species of gecko, the pictus geckos. The cloning is possible by implanting a nucleus into an egg. The reasoning for this is to learn more about the possibility of cloning human organs for transplant or regeneration. And they also go on to say the cloning methods could also be used to prevent extinction of species.
Interesting.
Which is cool. Yeah. Actually, I don't know if you remember a while back, I believe it was in Australia, they were starting a genetic ark. I don't know if you remember that. And they were taking on, a lot of it was going to be reptile species. And they were going to collect DNA and so they could later on clone. So
there's
I think
a few of those places
cool.
around the world, you know that. Like they're kind of like doomsday scenario type, you know, gene banks or whatever you want to call them. But
yeah,
they're considered arcs. And, you know, if something catastrophic should happen to the planet or to the species, they're, you know, there may be the possibility that one of these places will survive and, you know, there'll be a way to repopulate, you know, certain animals and stuff. I mean, I think it's worth doing, right?
It could have already been done. You don't know.
Right.
How are we,
right.
You know, you don't know if that's how we're here.
Yeah, that's true.
You never
know. We weren't there.
Right.
Yeah.
You never know. All right. And our last, and this is just a horrible story.
Oh, no.
A Washington state couple swindled and spent thousands of dollars in welfare cash meant for a blind young woman with cerebral palsy in their care.
Oh.
They neglect.
Oh, I remember this story. This is the one from way back.
Yeah.
Don't go into all the details, but yeah.
Okay. They neglected and starved a 19-year-old who weighed only 67 pounds at the time authorities intervened. April and Jeffrey Henderson spent $4,100 a month they got in Medicaid checks on flat-screen TVs and other electronics and an extensive reptile collection.
Jeez.
Yeah. The teen, meanwhile, wore nothing but soiled diapers, sat in filth and vomit.
Leave out the rest.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I'm good on that. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's they did. They stole the money. They weren't even related. The way it sounds is it was just a foster child. But they stole the money and spent it on a reptile collection, among other things. Which
Have
is
they
just,
been indicted or anything? Or convicted or anything yet?
Let's see. Let me go through here. They were finally charged April 10th, and this is, I don't think this is enough, with second-degree criminal mistreatment and Medicaid fraud. That's what they were charged with.
Wow. Wonder what's going to happen to all the animals now, all the reptiles.
Yeah, I don't know.
Local reptile rescue, you'd assume.
Yeah. And the way this sounds is they're just going to trial because they were just charged April 10th
right.
with those
right.
charges.
It's a relatively new story, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I hope they get the worst. I hope they get the maximum.
Definitely. Yeah, I couldn't believe it when I read that story.
Yeah.
All right, so I'll give you the recap. And one of the stories is fake. So here's the recap. More evidence of a loose Gaboon in South Carolina. Carjacker beat with rubber snake. Missing python has been found. Albino Burmese python loose in Benani, Africa. Biologists cloning geckos. Couple starved disabled teen to grow reptile collection. That's
well, we know that one's true. Yeah. All right, everybody. So everybody in the chat room, this is your chance to chime in and let us know which one of those stories do you think is fake. And just so you know, the last story is definitely true. Unfortunately, I wish it wasn't. But the other stories, one of them has the potential of being fake. And let's see. So far, chat says the Africa story. Elsa says the albino berm. What do you think, Sean Holiday? Which one is the full story in your opinion?
Oh, I don't know. Inserting an embryo into an egg through that, I might have to call that one maybe.
On the pictures,
because I know a little
yeah.
bit about eggs. Yeah, not that I don't want it to happen, but I think that it'd have to already, yeah, the embryo would already have to be there to attach itself to the digestive tube. So, in my opinion, I don't know if they can clone that.
Okay. All right. That's good. That's a good opinion, too. That's an educated opinion, everybody. Let's see. Jeff Scott saying the one-eyed snake named Mutton. yeah. Brooke is saying the one-eyed snake. All right. I'm going to go. Wow. I know Sean's got a good opinion on that, too. You know, I'm going to be a little different, though. I'm going to go with the story about the Gaboon, the expansion on that, that, you know, they're seeing that again. Because I think that that's just. I think that story is going to die, but I could be wrong. What do you think, Sean? Steve, which is the false story?
Sean got it right.
Ah.
The cloning geckos is the false story.
Oh, wow. So it does help. So, yeah. So now you guys can trust the information, I guess.
That's right. That's cool. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah.
That's the stuff, man. I told you. That's cool. Oh, Sean, I mean,
sure
that was a good one.
Yeah, the
embryo. That was really well
crafted. The embryo uses the egg for when it attaches in the first couple of days. It attaches itself to the digestive tube, and that's when it starts mm-hmm. to use the egg as a vessel during incubation. So, unless it was put there from the very beginning, it would almost be impossible for the embryo to even use the egg. So, they have to be one and the same. Yeah.
Hear that, Steve?
Yep, I hear it.
All right, that's cool.
What would I win?
Maybe
we should do a prize for it in the future. We haven't done prizes for it. It's just the, you know, you get the bragging rights, so to speak, that you didn't, you know, that you got the right, you know, answer. But
that's cool.
We should do something. We got to think about it. You know, we're always changing the format, so good idea.
Yeah, like
but,
a taco
I'm
or something.
Taco at least, right? Yeah.
Yeah, burrito.
All right, I'm starting to hear some. Starting to hear some new music playing. What's this?
Now, a moment in herp history.
All right, get the time machine going, Steve.
All right, since this episode is primarily about incubation, I wanted to find something in history about incubation. So, on February 7th, 1926, the title of the article read, Hatching Reptiles in Incubators. Methods of recent invention for hatching various kinds of reptiles are of more than ordinary interest. It has been found that alligator eggs can be hatched to excellent advantage in ordinary chicken incubators. Then the article goes on, and I'm going to continue researching this to find earlier experiments with it. Experiments in the artificial hatching and rearing of terrapins conducted for some years past by the United States Fisheries Bureau at Buford, North Carolina, have proved so successful that an industry of commercial importance seems likely to be developed in this line, which it has, if you think about it, because mm-hmm. we are all involved in it. And then it goes on, there is good reason to suppose that snakes could be artificially bred without difficult if there were a sufficient demand. And today there is. That's cool,
isn't
it?
Absolutely.
Yeah,
is cool.
So,
1926, huh?
1926.
How about that? That's before they figured out that, you know, they were temperature six determined, too, and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
You know, for crocodiles and alligators. That's awesome. It's a great story, Steve. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
All right. Why don't you tell us a little bit before you go? What's going on in your collection?
I've got another clutch of Millie Eyes that just got laid. And I've got some spotted pythons coming this week. So I'm really
Jeremy,
psyched.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm really psyched
about
folks, that.
Let's give him a quick plug. Jeremy Turgeon, the person who has lent his awesome jazz music to our sponsor plugs from J&D Reptiles, is basically selling most of his collection. He's got some really cool stuff still left over. So if you guys want to hook up with him, check him out on Facebook and on YouTube, J&D Reptiles and Jeremy Turgeon. So there you go.
Definitely.
All right, Steve. Why don't you give out your information, Steve, so people can find you.
Check me out on Facebook and YouTube under BC Barker Creations.
That's right. All right, Steve, thank you very much for the news, and we will see you next Sunday on the FlexWatch show.
I'll see you there. Have a good night.
You too. Take care.
You too,
Steve.
Thanks.
All right, Sean, we're to the full effect of the interview with you now, and it's you and me. Let's get into what you're doing with your new inventions, your new additions to your lineup of contributions to egg incubation. Let's hear it.
All right. I guess I can start where I left off. After kind of going over the design and the development of the Geo, it took a long time to kind of perfect the way that the design is now. That's why the look of it aesthetically isn't obviously very pretty, but we redid the Geo numerous times, well over 5 or 6 times, just because when you start to change things, you have to test them again. So once we mm-hmm. would lift or lower the nest, or once we would add an adjustment or extend the wall, these things had to be tested before you can move on to the next stage. So as we started to develop the Geo, we started to notice other things along with the process, and it was the questions that kept coming from myself, and then we released it. So the questions for myself was, you know, they do get a lot bigger, and the embryos are a little bit larger, but I never put any thought into it. I just thought, you know, I'm getting better hatch ratios, and I never really understood why is egg suspension better, they say, or why does it give better hatch ratios? Why are the eggs getting larger? And then I looked back at the other substrates continuously, and I looked at perlite, vermiculite, peat moss, and a mixture of all these as well. So I just kept going along just like the rest of us do. We don't look into it too much. And continued breeding until about 2009. We decided to release the Geo. I thought it was ready, which it was. It was ready for the public, and it made it easier for everybody that was a beginner in the hobby. That's really what it was the easiest. You can just basically drop perlite in the bottom, fill it up, drain it, and then it'll last 6 months. You don't have to do anything else to put the eggs in there and mark them. So that's what was – it's very convenient, very easy for people to use, and it still is. There was one thing that happened, though. When you use this process and form, it gives the egg an ideal environment, so it doesn't have to fight off inhibitors that are found in the median. These inhibitors are negative cautions. This is what caused fermenting of the median, the expiration, per se. So when you have these inhibitors, it'll actually inhibit the egg from a growth process, an optimal growth process. It won't allow it to take on excess hydration or nutrient and grow to a thoughtful growth cycle because the eggshell condenses and keeps it protected from these inhibitors. That's the result that WoW was receiving when using the Geo. It didn't have these negative elements that were affecting it to make it not grow larger.
Let me jump in real quick, Sean. let me jump in real quick. Now, I've noticed that when I when my females lay their eggs in EcoEarth, if I don't get to them within a day or two, and the EcoEarth has got a good moisture rate to it, those eggs have blown up to sometimes double and triple their normal size, and their shell is soft and squishy sometimes. But when I get them out of there and I put them into the perlite and vermiculite, they tend to, the shell hardens a bit, but it never goes back to its full normal shape. Is that what you're saying when you're talking about these inhibitors and stuff that the eggs are exposed to in the actual medium, the lay medium?
Yeah, basically. So that was the ultimate question I kept asking myself. After we released it in 2009, the eggs got too big for the geo. And basically, the better environment, the eggs got too large, and that is kind of what it was. Is why are the eggs getting larger? So I went back to my nest box. I wasn't using EcoEarth at the time. So I was using a peat moss vermiculite mix, which was what recommended to me by the breeder I was purchasing mine. And I used it for a year, mm-hmm. So I switched over to Coco, EcoEarth particular, which is still a great product. The mm-hmm. EcoEarth did very well. I used it for a long time. I used it for many years. And then as I started to experience with EcoEarth, I noticed that I'd have to replace it because it just didn't last as long as I needed it to. So I'm in there about every 90 days replacing it, if not 2 months, was the goal. And there's a few breeders now that currently do this. They do a medium exchange in their nest box once a month, every 6 weeks. This is going to keep that media nice and fresh because these inhibitors affect the egg. The egg is its most vulnerable in the first 72 hours after it's laid. This is when the digestive tube attaches itself to the oat sac. This is very important. If it has a partial attachment or not 100%, that's when you get your some of your hatch ratios are off. That could have happened better. These inhibitors are fermenting agents. They're nitrates. They're carbon. They're carbohydrates. They're sugars. Mm-hmm. So to kind of wrap it back around to where I was. Your eggs, the reason why they get larger is because you have a good medium. If you had not such a great medium, like I was using before, which is an organic matter, which is peat moss, peat is actually a good product. It's actually what they call peatlands. It's organic matter, so it's gathered from these different ecosystems, these different ecozones, all over, and it's never consistent. And that's what my problem was, is that, if you don't have a consistent medium every single time, you're going to have inconsistent results. So this mm-hmm. year, everything's great. 80% hatch ratio, everything's fine. Everything's going well. Next year, something happens. The median has a different expiration every time. So you can't actually begin research and study unless you find a neutral start. And cocoa is a great start. But I started testing different cocos, ExoTerra, EcoEarth. These are all great cocos, by the way. If you're currently using them, they're a great product to use. With these products and other cocos, I started to realize that there's different forms. Why was there difference? So I went to the source, and I actually asked them, I said, what's the pretreatment, and what is it about your cocoa that makes it different than the other type? And the answer was, how do they pretreat it, and how did they get it, was my question to them. It's whatever's left over, they said, when they're finished. Whatever's left over, cocoa's used. It's the largest biomass on Earth is cocoa. Is actually used right now for the harvesting of ethanol gases, which is used in vehicles right now. So that's what they do. They basically use that to produce ethanol gases. So if cocoa doesn't have these fermenting agents removed, these negative cautions, the carbohydrates, the sugars, which it has high sugar and carbohydrates in it naturally, then you're going to get fermenting in your medium when you use it in your nest box. So just by asking these simple questions, what is the pretreatment, the answers were across the board were, they heat it up very hot to try to kill bacteria and any bugs or anything in there, and then they radiate it. Well, what this does is this doesn't remove any of the negative caution. This just simply kills whatever's in there. But it also kills the biostructure of the medium. It kills all the microorganisms and everything in there. And that's good stuff. That's what you want to keep inside your nest box to help keep a regulated help eat those carbohydrates later and those sugars to help keep it regulated. If you have none of that good stuff in there, the microbes, then it's gonna be like an invasion of an army of nothing but bad elements because the sugar is so heavy in there and the carbohydrates. It's just the expiration is going to be sooner. And that's what I started to realize. Mm-hmm. When I'm working with the geo and you have an egg that's stretching itself out larger than normal, it's making it more vulnerable. And when it makes it more vulnerable, you want to make sure that you're not transferring these negative cautions and these bacteria into the incubation environment, because therefore it's going to be easier for them to penetrate the egg and make the egg more vulnerable and actually affect your hash ratio. So that's where I came about after releasing the GLs, already working with cocos and different kinds of nest box mediums, because I knew that the eggs that didn't hatch, there was something in there. So when I kept bringing my samples, we actually worked with a company down here who would send out or do soil samples, and you can't just do a standard bacteria test. It costs tons of money to do so. So you had to search for specific things, specific bacteria, and things that you thought were affecting it. The answer I got from them is that I had inconsistent samples every time. They didn't know why I'd bring samples from two different samples that were the same exact product, but they were completely different. So that was my thought was, oh my gosh, I've got inconsistent medium. And that's how we started to, what was that?
No, I just said right. You know.
Oh yeah, sorry. So I was like, these are all consistent. And that's what the guy told me. He's like, hey, I don't mind you coming by and spending the money, but you know, you got to figure out how you're going to get, you need something neutral. And I go, what'd you say? And he goes, you need something that's more, you know, that doesn't, that's not infected. I go, what do you mean infected? Mm-hmm. He goes, well, look at these different reagents. We looked at all the information, and it showed that every single one of them were different. So then I started to buy one of each kind, and every single sample was different. So if I get peat moss, two different bags, they had different samples. So how can I have consistent results and try to do captive breeding with hatch ratios if I don't have consistent medium? So that's when I found cocoa, and it's very consistent to a certain level. But at the same exact time, it's a pre-treatment and process that will separate the quality of your product. And that's when I decided to venture off into making and designing and working with our own cocoa fiber product. At that time, I was working and testing the expiration. So once we decided that cocoa was a new nest box medium, it was great. It worked better. It transferred less bacteria in the incubation stage. It also had some better attributes to it. It actually fights off negative cautions. They're using it in filtration right now in other countries. They're packing filters with cocoa fiber because it has the ability to absorb the bad nitrate. And the good ones exceed because it has that absorption. The question I asked myself was, can cocoa ferment? And the reason why it has a better fermentation or less fermentation is because it's already been through a pre-treatment process of fermenting. So now all you can do is contaminate it. That's what we did with our product. Actually, we call it RepTiGrow. We launched it last month, and it's been successful as far as getting a lot of samples and care packages out to these individuals that we want testing and working with it. It ain't the best thing since sliced bread, but it's going to be a little different than what you're used to. And the major difference is it's just got a better expiration than your current medium. That's the only difference. All the other cocos are still great products, and if you're still currently using them, you can use them. This one just has a little bit better expiration, and it's got a larger fiber because of the benefits of it. The larger fiber will actually reduce the compaction that happens. See, we need to look at cocoa differently than other industries do. Cocoa is used in planting and all this other different industry. So they're using it in exposed environments. We're not exposed. We're sealed in a box in the dark, oversaturated, and defecation, worm castings. Our cocoa is nothing but contaminated consistently, so we have to make sure that we keep that a level balance in there. So when you introduce a cocoa that already has these negative cautions, it expires much faster. The pH is off. And are you familiar with pH, David?
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with that, yeah. I understand about that.
So
explain it a little bit for the listeners, though.
Okay. pH is basically how soil is measured, and it basically measures its fertility, kind of. So is it going to be optimal for, let's just say, living organisms, per se, like our blood, human blood, or even living organisms have a pH of right around between 5 and 7, 7 being ideal, 5 being a little low. So this is ideal for a lot of different industries, but for ours it's not ideal because if we start with a higher pH, the components we're dealing with, defecation and compaction of the soil, and also these negative cautions that are currently in there without using a pretreatment process that removes these, will cause the pH to go up. This is an acidic level. So what you want to do is you want to keep that pH nice and low because that way it doesn't cause a bacteria to breed and break down the soil faster. So when that female goes in there, and it's been 60 to 75, 80 days, you haven't changed your median out, she's going to lay that nice fresh egg right inside of that bad median, and then the egg actually absorbs all of its nutrient, you know, from that area, so it's going to absorb what's around it. So if it's got defecation and stuff around it, this is when your hatch ratio is not going to be all of your eggs. People are saying, I'm hatching out perfect, which is fine. I didn't chase that. I chased the 1 to 2%. the 1 or 2% of eggs that didn't make it, or they were in the nest box and I found them, and you know, they're over hard or over easy, I call them, ones that were, or ones that went through the full incubation process and then they didn't hatch. They basically were full-term babies or stillbirth. These kind of things are the things I tested and tried to research on. What I found was incubation meaning inconclusive because I didn't have a neutral one. So once we were able to find out that the incubation median was affected by the lay box because you're transferring those negative cautions, you're transferring bacteria back into the incubation stage. Now, this is another bad environment because you have 80 to 90 degrees, very little oxygen flow, and oxygen flow is actually number one killer bacteria. A better oxygen flow, the better, because it'll actually help reduce that bacteria buildup. You want to see the difference? Just put no holes in your cup with a bad egg in there, and then put holes in a cup with a good egg in. Airflow actually restricts the amount of bacteria that grows within that cup. And that's what I started to realize when we made the cocoa. So I need to make it larger fiber so it didn't compact as easy, and it aerated better. Mm-hmm. So better aeration, better oxygen flow, less bacteria buildup. What we started to do, we started to break it down slowly into different categories. What kind of cocoa did I want to go with? We went with one that's been naturally through the fermentation process, and it's on the website. It shows the actual breakdown of how it all goes through the process. We use a pretreatment that's actually used to benefit the cocoa, and that's what the next product we have, like I was telling you, you have a sample of now that we're getting, and a few breeders have it across the country that we're working with, and it works directly with the cocoa. And people always say, well, what's the pretreatment with? If you look at any of your mediums, vermiculite, perlite, peat moss, the pretreatment, you know what's in perlite, David? And I can actually, Wikipedia, I've looked at this tons of times. People always say, why is perlite better? And this is a question anybody can ask. Why is perlite better than vermiculite? The question is because perlite
it's argumentable, though, that, you know, there's people, there's different sides that say that, you know, perlite isn't better than vermiculite. So, yeah, are you saying that you found that it is better than vermiculite?
Yes, in my opinion, it is actually it's close to. I mean, obviously, I prefer Reptigrow to be the cocoa fiber product that we have to be an incubation medium, but it's still going to expire, and that's what people need to understand. Is that it doesn't matter if you're using an incubation medium to incubate your eggs in. The perlite won't expire, but you can oversaturate perlite, and it can dry out faster. And there's no real, you know, you can't. That's why a lot of the larger breeders use it. The larger breeders use it. And you know what's in perlite? When I looked it up, it's actually just volcanic matter like vermiculite or things of that nature. But if you look at the analysis of perlite, it has minerals in it. This is what people are saying don't do. But for years, it's had minerals since the beginning of time. It has calcium oxide. Calcium oxide, if you look inside the chemistry chart, it works as lime. So it actually helps reduce the bacteria buildup because it's got a lime mineral in there. You have silicon dioxide. That actually works as a silica. Silica is actually the way that mineral itself is, that compound is what plants use to absorb nutrients through their root system and through their stoma of their skin. So these things are already found in perlite. So if you have an incubation medium that has good, these are not bad fertilizers. These are natural fertilizers. These are things that are found within these nesting zones in the wild. So, and I was telling you this when I talked to you earlier, David, and, you know, these females in the wild, they find these cracks and crevices, the bases of trees, the lining of vegetation, you know, along the riverbed, they have those deposits where calcium builds up. You know, in the wild, they don't have an enclosed environment. So the dust particles from all over. So if they blow these dust particles onto the leaves and onto these rocks, then the rain comes by, and the rain washes these dust particles, these cracks and crevices in these small areas. These areas, these females, they lay their eggs in them. They're balanced. They're naturally balanced because of these different elements, these calcium minerals, these irons, these magnesium, these different kinds of silicates. So these areas are balanced because it's Mother Nature's. It's how it works. With peat moss, it's different because peat is actually found in different areas. It's the decomposition of an area. It's not the same thing. It has a very good microbial activity in it, but its expiration is a lot earlier too than perlite. So that's why I found it to be better. I worked off of expiration and the results I received when incubating the eggs in them. This is done by weight and also done by the growth of the embryo after incubation and during incubation as well, and also in the nest box. I tried perlite in my nest box. You can't use it because it dries out too fast, but I was willing to try everything just to see what would happen. Then I mixed it. And when you mix perlite, it's a good thing. It actually helps But then again, it wasn't ideal for me. It didn't quite work the way I needed it to. Ingestion of the perlite was not good. What I found with all reptiles, if you replace your median every month, right now if you go to all your boxes, I'm not sure who's listening, you'll find that your animal or your pet is currently ingesting the median. They do it consistently. It's found in paleontology books for years, dinosaurs ingested median, gravel, soils, rocks to help with digestion. It is my opinion that it is part of their diet. And if you have a bad median, they're not going to ingest it, obviously, because they know it's bad, because it's fermenting and it has fecal in it, because you haven't changed it in 2 months. Here's a good example.
Mm-hmm.
Go home, don't clean your fish tank for 2 months, and then tell me what you think. These geckos, they use these boxes. I mean, it's a good example. The pH is off, it's terrible, and you just think it's just a lizard laying some, you know, but it doesn't have that natural aeration. It's oversaturated because we try to go as long as we can before we have to be back in the box. You know, it's oversaturated.
Right.
It doesn't have enough time to evaporate the air. The bacteria builds up. You don't, so all these things, all these elements come into play when you're messing with hatch ratios. And this is what I wanted to explain to some of the listeners that maybe advanced or maybe is just started in the hobby yesterday. The Metox median is probably one of the most important things when breeding your pet, is to remember that it may be just dirt, but you should not be going the whole season with one nest box median. You should be changing that out more often than not. And it's not just necessarily with the product that we currently have, but any product, because they're all about the same at 30 days. So vermiculite, peat moss, they're all pretty close. RepuGrow, Coco, EcoEarth, all of them are about close at that 30-day mark, but it's past that expiration, which we stretch to because that's just what we do. So unless you're changing it out, you want to make sure that expiration is further out. So that's what we try to do is just keep that median nice and fresh because the animals are going to ingest it. So with what I found was when the animals do ingest bad median, they get sick. It's real simple. You'll get stressed, you'll get anorexia, and this is what happens when animals do this. And there's bacteria we found inside these medians, too, that was just horrible. And I'm looking back, I'm like, no wonder if you change your median. If you put fresh median in one enclosure and then let that other median expire to 90 days, you will see that the animals will not ingest the old median because it's not good for them. The other one, they'll ingest it, and that's just common. So just to kind of throw that out there, if you guys do see that, keep an eye out on it. You'll know when your soil's bad because the animals will stop. And ingestion of median is not good, they say. But at the same exact time, people just said that let's not use this and this because this is the results we got once upon a time, and somebody said they told me that. No one's actually studied it. Or if they have, there's not an open book about it. And when I started doing the research on everything, I found that cocoa fiber was one of the better medians to use for your nest box. After we decided
let me jump in for a second here. Let me ask you a question. Now, I've been using the EcoEarth ever since I got started, and I've noticed I guess I have a two-part question. Part number one is, in nature, I would think that leopard geckos in particular would be able to, you know, they lick everything when they're walking. They're always licking. You pick them up, they lick your hand. You put them in their tub, they're licking the ground. I believe that their tongue is very sensitive and they can detect certain things that, you know, us, for instance, we wouldn't be able to detect that way. So I'm thinking that in nature, they find the most perfect places to lay their eggs where they just know, they're programmed to know that this particular spot is good. So, you know, a lot of times we find that sometimes the gecko has a perfectly full lay box and for some reason they lay their eggs in the water bowl or, you know, they'll lay their eggs outside of the lay box and, you know, we'll have it all perfect. Like, do you think for some reason they feel that that particular lay medium isn't good for them at that time?
Possibly, yeah, absolutely. The expiration of your nest box median is a lot sooner than you think, and it's because it comes with sugar already in it. I mean, sugar, that's what, you know, for fermenting is sugars. So if you remove those and have a pretty balanced median throughout the incubation process, see, right now we have the product you have now, what we call our RepiStones, and those will be hopefully released coming up in a couple of months once a few people get back to me on some products. We're trying out different sizes and stuff like that. These are going to help balance the median during the incubation process and also during the nest box median. And I've got ideal nest boxes that have been using this product that have been 6-7 months old, and they're actually still at a great pH. So this is what's going to help us through the incubation process, understanding that you can do further research. And I couldn't because I kept running into roadblocks because my incubation medium didn't match my NestBox medium because they were too inconsistent. So now I got a consistent NestBox medium, and now I'm able to do further research with the product. Once I did further research with the eggs, I was able to determine that the reason why eggs get bigger with the Geo is because it's got an optimal condition, so it doesn't have these inhibitors fighting it off. So as I started to use more cocoa, the egg got bigger. And started to use, instead of the peat moss, the egg got bigger and larger. So every time I tried to readjust the Geo or try to redesign it, the eggs would consistently get larger and larger and larger. So we got to a point where we currently are working with a couple different egg trays. We're looking for a redesign of our product, but I want to make sure that this will be the last time because I've already done it so many times. I just got, you know, involved with understanding how the incubation process works. And if I made the tray a certain height, the eggs would touch the lid. And that's where bacteria sits. If there's bacteria in the lid, it'll press against that egg, and then that egg won't be allowed to permeate those gases that are produced when there's cell production. That's when the egg's growing. So this is where you run into these things of hatch ratios, you know, can affect them. I didn't have any egg that touched the lid that had any issues hatching. So, no, it didn't cause any issues, but I just didn't like it. I didn't prefer it. There's a lot of people who don't and do know this. We want to make sure that we always give the customer the best option. So there's going to be always advancements into this stage of incubation or this type of incubation. So.
Okay, cool. And just so you guys know, we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back from the break, we're going to open up the phone lines, okay, for your questions. And we're going to get into more specifics about the actual Geo and the incubation process from there, from that point on, once the eggs are laid and once the eggs are put into the actual Geo. So stand by, everybody. We'll be right back. This is a great show so far. Hang tight, everyone.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David's Fine Geckos creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. Gecko Nation Radio is sponsored by Ohio Gecko is famous for amazing tangerines, snows, and other very unique leopard gecko projects. Thad also has some incredible fat tail morphs available from stingers to starbursts. Visit him online at ohiogecko.com and at expos in the Northeast. He is also the owner of geckoforums.net. Dale's Bearded Dragons is your one-stop source for any reptile supply products that you may need, from Exoterra, Zoomed, Rapashi, Repcal, Fluker, and much, much more, and all at 20 to 50% cheaper than your local pet store or big chain pet store. They are also the biggest reptile supply distributor at most of the Northeast expos. Contact them directly online at dalesbeardeddragons.com or message me on Facebook and I'll put you in touch with the owner. Supreme Gecko is a great source for crested geckos, day geckos, and other species, including microgeckos. Wally Kern is a top-notch breeder and gecko enthusiast. Visit supremegecko.com for his available animals and supplies. Gecko Boa Reptiles is your source for the highest quality leopard gecko morphs and wild types, from white and yellows to radars, amazing tremper morphs, and rare subspecies. John is a world-class breeder and extremely knowledgeable. If you're looking for something truly special in geckos, contact John Scarborough at geckoboa.com and on Facebook. Rainbow Mealworms is the largest worm grower in the world and selling to the public since 1956. If you need the highest quality mealworms, superworms, and crickets for your pets, contact them at www.rainbowmealworms.net.
All right, everybody. We are back. And tonight's episode is with Sean Holiday of Your Gecko Guy. In this part of the show, we're going to open up the phone lines to your questions related to incubation. We're going to talk about incubation of leopard gecko eggs in general. The call-in number is 646-478-5331. And keep in mind, we're doing our nightly raffle for callers. So for people that call in, we are going to be, one of you is going to be lucky enough to win a sample pack of Geo's and Sean's other inventions. So that'll be really cool. So we are back on the line with Sean. Sean, are you ready to take a few calls?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do this. Caller from the 916 area code, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio. Caller, you there? All right, let's take the next caller. Caller from the 530 area code, you're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, Dave, Sean, how you doing? This is Jeff Scott.
What's up, Jeff Scott?
How are you doing?
Bud?
Good, good. Hey, I got a question. Have you done this for Sean? Have you done? I mean, all our mediums they're hydrated with water. Have you tested the waters? And I'm sure that has a big part of the microbial life. If you're using tap with a lot of chlorine, it's probably knocking the heck out of it.
Yeah. That's actually a very good question, and it's a question that's needed to. It's going to be an article that I was just trying to finish up. Using different kinds of water is a huge thing. If you go to any kind of a city page, and they'll give you your breakdown of your water content and like the analysis of it, you'll be able to tell the quality of your water in your area. I talked to John over at GeckoBo about this too. It depends on your area. Our area up here has got pretty good water, and as long as you're within realm, you can use bottled water. To answer your question, all my study was done with bottled Kirkland water. That's what I've always used. And then I was running it through a carbon filter for a long time to try to move the inhibitors. I actually used active carbon within the geo when I was using just water to help keep that balance within the water during the process of incubation. The water content does matter, absolutely. I also use it with my nest box. Reverse osmosis is obviously ideal, which everybody knows. Reverse osmosis just means you're going to filtrate the water through a membrane, removing any kind of debris or these kind of microbes that will actually cause negative effects on the. And when you're dealing with this, this is absolutely a great question. It's actually a very good phone call in, and it's a very big, very big thing. When you're dealing with these small testings and these small different things, you've got to make sure that everything's level all the way across the board. And water, if you take tap water, put it inside of Google a picture, tap water compared to distilled or bottled, and do like a 30-day picture, you'll show, the negative attributes about that water, the sample, it'll show. So, yeah, very good question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I've been using GEOs for a while, and I tried it without bottled water, and I had bad results, so I did the bottled water, and night and day.
I've used it for years.
Good stuff.
You got fluoride, you got chlorine, you got, 10,000 other chemicals in drinking water these days.
Yeah.
It's I never drink it. I hate showering.
Too.
What's that?
Yeah.
Pharmaceuticals are also found in some of these tap waters, like in Florida. There's
right.
A lot of these larger breeding facilities that amphibians will have reverse osmosis water because it does affect them. Those small little things can take advantage of one egg. Not all eggs are. People think they're tough and they're hardcore and they're fine. They're not. They really aren't. They're a permeable surface. And if you look at a permeable surface, you look at plants. Think of it the same way. That's kind of agriculturally. That's where you find a lot of your research on soil content. That's what I did. I went out and got an education in it, and it's trying to figure out how to benefit and make products designed around this form of incubation, because our trays are not full egg suspension. I've told people that for a while. You don't have to have a 2 feet of space between the egg and the tray or the egg and the median for it to be egg suspension. We have a partial touching the median thing. They act like tentacles of giving the egg nutrients during incubation. I sent David a copy of this research. I just haven't posted it yet. It was basically an article I found in National Geographic, and it said in there, very in-depth. And it says that eggs actually absorb nutrient during incubation, during natural incubation. And this is where my soil samples kept coming in. They kept coming in off, and they kept having this high level of mineral in there. I was just like, how is this? If I'm using bottled water and I'm using a soil medium that's completely neutral, this makes no sense. Why is there a mineral in here? Well, I found what it was. It was actually the fluid that the female, when they lay eggs, they have a fluid that surrounds the egg and protects it, just like a deer amniotic fluid, just like a human. So amniotic fluid works as like a safe zone coating. And then what it does, when it dries as a mineral. And that actually gives the egg fertilizer during incubation. That's what I found to be the biggest part of the research, and that's basically what we use to pre-treat a lot of our that's what we use to pre-treat our cocoa with. So when you have these natural things, think about it. These eggs, if you don't believe me, take a female that's ready for term, put her in a box, she'll lay that egg, and you'll see the mineral. It's the gooey. Everybody knows it's on there. The female actually will roll the egg inside of the substrate to disguise it. So when she lays it, if they do find it, they don't recognize it. These eggs are vulnerable. If you allow an egg to not put such a hard, thick shell up, that's when you get your full-term babies that aren't that don't hatch because they couldn't permeate all those gases. You know, I did testing strictly on those eggs, the ones that went full term and didn't hatch. They were poisoned. They were poisoned because they couldn't permeate all the gases at the end of incubation, and the eggshell was too thick, and the undevelopment of the egg tooth, which caused them to die within the egg. That was my analysis. That's what me and the other people that we were working with finally figured out, is that these eggs were bad before the egg could actually hatch. That, you know,
right.
The egg is a vessel. So the egg doesn't use the embryo. The embryo uses the egg. And that's the only way it can absorb hydration, nutrients, and help itself. So if we don't protect the egg and make it easier for it to take on these elements, then you're going to get the results we currently have in the market, which is inconsistent hatch ratios. But if we give them a consistent environment with consistent medium, and we try to provide them with these natural things and just a straightforward, consistent process, you know, and I guarantee every time you're going to grab one of our bricks of cocoa, it's going to be consistent, and it's going to have that neutral point. And the only thing you're going to do is you're just going to add to it, and then at that point in time, your hydration you're going to add to it will be based off of whatever you add to it. So if you have a neutral point starting, it makes the system a lot easier. But good question on the water. I sure appreciate you calling in, and I look forward to try some of the product.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to check it out. No, it makes sense. This is a very interesting show. Like everybody else, you get that occasional egg that it doesn't hatch. It goes full term, and you know, all of a sudden it's bad. Yeah, you cut it open. It's like, you know, oh dang it, what'd I do wrong? But great.
There's always a chance there's other things that happen during the process. It was my opinion that the outside layer of the shell was so thick that it couldn't permeate the gases easily. Because at the end of its incubation stage, think of this, and this is just real quick, you're using this incubation medium for 45 to 50 days that you've already put in a cup with zero oxygen, zero, you know, ventilation of the substrate, poor conditions basically for bioactive medium. You're going to let that expire right around the egg. So as it's full term, it's producing the most gas, it's needing the most hydration, it's needing the most ability for it to expand itself, and yet the medium's expired. So this is why eggs get bigger in the geo, because it doesn't have those negative harmful elements taking advantage of it. So now if you go the other direction, that's why egg suspension, people get better hatch ratios, because it doesn't have that. And that's just... if you put it in a tray, you're not going
to
give it...
Focus on not just the egg, but the surroundings. I see what's,
You have to make sure that you take, and the water is a very good question. So anybody out there listening, take advantage of that water. It's simple. It's not a big deal. A lot of people think that, oh, it's something else I have to do. He's making this brain, you know, he's making it brain science just to incubate. You know, and I'm not using it as a value of money, but one of those babies is worth more than one bottle of water, or your time. I think it as a, as husbandry. I mean, our goal here is not – that's the zoology of our hobby. That's what makes you interested. That's what keeps the individuals currently interested in the hobby and process. The genetic, you know, the coding, the incubation processes, it's a whole other world, and I've been experiencing it for many years and working with a bunch of different testing and products and designing stuff, and I just want to share it with others. That's why this – we call it a geosystem, and the geosystem stands for, you know, geological, obviously, for agriculture, but it's a system. You're using the best that you can find to be as neutral as possible to provide the environment. It's our job to provide them what they're given in the wild, these elements. Perlite, it's in perlite right now. They're using fertilizer to incubate eggs all over the world, and we just never – you can look it up right now on Wikipedia. The analysis of it shows calcium, it shows iron, it shows magnesium, it shows this, you know, the silica, the same things that we're giving the eggs in certain incubation environments, but not in others. So use bottled water, I guess that's the best
answer to
the question.
No, absolutely. I'm with you. I want to do whatever I can. I got to take responsibility. I'm having these geckos lay eggs, so I got to do whatever I can to make them, you know, healthy as I can.
Yeah, be Mother Nature.
Thanks for calling in.
Oh yeah, thanks for having me. Great show.
All right,
thank you.
All right, take care. All right, we got some more callers on the line. I just want to keep things going. Great question, Jeff. Thank you. All right, let's see. Two people I know. Let's see. Go ahead and call her from the 2 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio. What's up, Daryl?
Hey, guys. How's it going tonight?
Doing good.
Yeah, I got a late start, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to this tomorrow, but I'm really excited about listening to all this stuff, Sean. Looks like you really... done a lot of research and some valuable information there. in Texas, where I live, the water is very, very hard. And so I use RO water. And, of course, this is the first year for me to be hatching any eggs, and it seems to be working pretty well. So you think that's that or bottled water either way, huh?
Yeah, that's what I've used for, and it didn't cover it. I didn't even mention it on the website. Yeah, it's for me. It was common knowledge because I was told to do so years ago, and then I just never looked back. So yeah, I always try to use bottled water. I mean, some people say my water is great, and you can use the other waters. It's not gonna harm it. It's not like it's gonna affect your pets terribly. It's not gonna really kill your hatch ratios or anything. But it's just trying to make sure that. The understanding of why you should do it, that's the education part of it is what I try to influence you with, is why you should use it. And
right,
just
and
look
it's
it
one
up.
More little thing that you can do. It's one more little thing that you
exactly.
can do to help the process. That's the thing. Even I mean, there's so many little tricks and stuff that we learn along the way, and this is just one more thing. And I think it's a big deal because, you know, we added a whole house filtration system on my house because I couldn't stand showering in fluoride and chlorine. Your body acts like a sponge. You absorb these chemicals. And
exactly.
whether you believe it or not, you can dismiss it and say it doesn't affect you. But fluoride does build up in your bones. It builds up in your brain. And, you know, you may not think about it. You may say, oh, it's all BS, but it's true. And what the same water, the eggs are going to get some of that too. And, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Makes sense. Just makes sense. Daryl, your success rate so far, how many have you lost any eggs yet?
Yes. I'm up to 36 eggs that I'm incubating, and I've had 4 eggs go bad, and they were duds from the beginning. So, and then I've got one more that I think is I'm pretty sure is not good, and it was just laid. What's today, Sunday? It was just late Thursday or Friday. But,
oh, yeah.
You know, and I'm using EcoEarth. And, you know, something I didn't think about until I just was listening to you on the not using the nest material for a whole season. That makes sense. You know, because if they get in there and poop or whatever, you know, you're going to foul that earth and get fungus started in there before, you know.
Yeah, I always remove the first. Whenever I open my nest box, just a quick tip. The minute you open that box up, you know, remove the females, place them along the sides of the nest box, remove that top layer. I mean, I'll just scoop it off, that first top layer, and toss it. Don't mix that back in your median, because that's what they've been trampling on, you know, for who knows. And that's
sure.
where a lot of your fecal is actually at, is right there. I mean, of course they're going to dig and they're going to bury it. I mean, there's always going to be that too, but it doesn't hurt just to take off that quick top layer, because then what's going to happen is you're naturally going to be exchanging the median on accident. So it's going to be a habit.
Yeah.
You're going to be like, oh, now I'm low on median, I got to add more. So, and that's what's nice about the new cocoa from RepiGrow is that it's actually those larger fibers. So what happens is it starts to break down over time. So you'll know when you need to change your median because it'll start to lower. You'll be like, uh-oh, I'm starting to get low on median. So then you'll have to add more naturally. It creates a habit. And you should be changing up median a lot more. This is just little quick tips of the trade, you know, that I didn't even think of myself until I started testing my own soil samples. And then everybody's just like, man, you know, your median's bad. Well, how is it bad? I just replaced it 2 months ago. Well, it's
right.
expired already. So then I started.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, you you take everything for granted. And you don't think about the little things a lot of times.
I have some eggs here that, oh my God, it would break my heart if they didn't hatch. Like I have a couple of geckos here from rare bloodlines that, like nobody else really has at this point. And I'm trying to. I got a few little eggs in the incubator that I've been. You know, working on, and they're doing good so far. But if something were to happen, it would break my heart at this point. But you know, this show, I'm learning so much, and honestly, I am going to be doing my own testing too. And I seriously, Sean, I really think that just from hearing what you're saying, I believe it makes sense. It just makes sense, you know what you're saying.
You know, that's all they try to get across is just the basics. I mean, once you explain it, hey, there's nothing wrong with the cocoa you're using right now, David. And Dale, there's nothing wrong with the cocoa you guys are using. Continue to use it. It's fine. Just replace it more. I'm not trying to tell you that the median you're currently using is bad because it's not. I'm just simply telling you that you need to change it out more, which is actually going to benefit the people who are selling it to you because they're going to tell you, hey, you know, buy more, so it's actually helping them. But in my opinion, my median expiration just by the testing we did is longer. It's not just a little bit longer. It's double. And with the new product we're going out with and Dave is working with right now, it'll actually help balance it for even longer than that. And what these do is they've shown they actually act as like a balance. They actually balance the median. And what they do is they help keep the bacteria breakdown within the box. And, you know, these stones, they have in the wild. It keeps the pH level because that's when the eggs are going to be just like plants. So they're going to absorb a certain amount of nutrients based on the pH. So just like humans. So if your pH is too high, your eggs aren't going to absorb the right nutrients that it needs during the first couple of stages. But if your pH is ideal in your nest box, then it could basically thrive. And that's why your eggs do get large, and then they shrink up inside your median because it's two different medians. So, you know, that fertilizer that the female laid her eggs with, you're leaving it behind. And now you're going to put the eggs in a new median with no fertilizer. That I'm not using, just as an example, you're going to put them in a completely different median that's going to expire before your eggs actually hatch because you don't have very much in there either. Most incubation cups are only 12 ounces. You have a whole shoebox full of median that's going to take longer to expire versus one little cup. So one little cup, you want to make sure you have the expiration of that stay as long as possible. And that's the only difference between the product that we currently, that we basically designed is that, you know, I'm using geos, they go the whole season because of the other products we're adding to them, because of the expiration, because we already removed all those negative cautions and inhibitors, that there isn't a force field. So if there is defecation, you know, in there or something, it doesn't have a team to back it up because we already took them out. So basically the bioactive median eats defecation and neutralizes it before it has a chance to contaminate the whole sample. And that's kind of a nice mixture. Yeah, you want to keep that rotating within your collection, you know. And people say, what about cross-contamination where you're using different samples and things of this nature? You know, it's pretty simple to me. Scrape off the top layer, throw it away, and then if it looks bad, replace it. And if it's $5 a brick.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to make a lot of salt. Just dirt, guys. Throw it away, get some new dirt.
I just put in an order on your website for some more geos and stuff. And, man, I wish I'd have got some of that now. I may call you and try to add that to it.
Yeah.
Well, you may win the raffle, so hang tight.
Well, there you go. I'll wait till tomorrow. So, but yeah, I really want to try it. That sounds interesting. I've got one more question, and I'll get out of your hair. What's the reasoning behind you going to the new type suspension trays versus the old geos?
This is a good topic. Me and Dave were actually going to kind of breeze by it real quick. Just the only thing I have to say about the newer trays compared to the geos is they're two different products.
Right.
You know, I can't – it's kind of hard because I invented this thing, you know, in my garage with my grandfather. So I know how it works. I know why eggs get bigger. I know how to keep them from doing certain things. So I'm so far past that design. We're working with two different designs currently right now. I'm looking at them. That's an older design. I'm just glad that, you know, we're able to move forward from that design and branch into a different one that's better for it. So, you know, it does suck, I'll be honest with you. But, you know, that's part of business. You know, there wouldn't be a Super Bowl if there was only just one team, right?
Right.
So,
it looks like you get better airflow in the new design versus the old design.
What are you talking about there? Are you talking about the pirated? I mean the imitation.
No. I'm talking about, you know, he has the old geos, the white ones that fit in there that are injection molded or whatever, and then the new design, the clear plastic trays that look cleaner
we're going to cover that topic. We'll cover that topic, too.
Okay.
I thought you were talking about the other black trays. I apologize.
I got yours first. I actually got some of those just to look at, and I don't think...
They're cleaner product. The reason
they're
why
cleaner product,
does,
but I don't think they have near the air transfer, and the holes are too small, which you've done a video on that, and that I see, you know, and that was my biggest fear with them. And I haven't used one yet, to be honest with you, but...
I use them. I use them, and I hatch geckos out of them, you know, and there's going to be negative things about different trays, different things. The way I look at it is that you're going to choose the one that you want, and then incubating both of them, and then you'll see the difference in the results. That's, you know,
sure.
That's testing. That's what you do. The only thing I can let you know is that I do try my best to, you know, kind of keep that. The video I did on that was based off of and I got some kind of biased comments on it, but basically the video I did on that was just a flat perlite in both, and the difference was the oxygen flow in that video. Is it different completely 110%? I don't know. I'm not going to continue to test them, but use what you prefer, and I'll kind of leave it there.
Well, and I think
it
is. I mean, if you look at them, it's got to be because the holes are smaller. It is a cleaner-looking product, but at the end of the day, you know, I think that the air transfer over the egg, you know, in your medium is got to be better than that design because they're just the holes aren't big enough.
You just take an oxygen meter and you can
find out,
measure the oxygen level.
I'd be curious to find out what type of plastic is being used in the imitation because usually these imitations are made overseas in China, and there's lots of impurities in the because they're
absolutely
trying to make everything so
He's already approached that. They've already approached that. It's non-toxic. Not going to be the issue with the tray. It's going to be a preference, and it's real simple. These older geodes that I currently am working with, the ones that are available, they're going to work fine. But here's the thing. The eggs are going to touch the lid, and they're going to continue to do that because we're working with even better products. So once you get the new RepuGrow, the eggs get even bigger. So I didn't have
RepuGrow,
a choice. I had to design it even more. So, it's up to you. It's all about preference. I'm not the kind of person that, you know, down another product except for true factual information. Test them yourself. Does kind of. But to answer your question, I apologize. The other trays, me and David, we're going to cover those. The other trays are basically for a 6-quart container, they're like the light diffusers. So back when I was telling them way early 2000s, I was using light diffusers with just straws, either glued or supported in beams, and I kept saying, you know what, man, it'd be nice if I can just make a wall here. So when we designed the new egg tray, people kept saying, hey, what container do I buy? With the circular ones, you can buy that container that you have there, and that's basically for the chameleon and bearded dragon and turtle industry, and also corn snake because they have a different kind size of egg. But the other light diffusers were basically designed so you can cut and match them to the container you're currently using. And this was very important to me, to use a universal tool. So if you just look at the egg tray, you can just simply trim it to the container you currently have. So if you go home and you got a Gladware container, you got a Sterlite, you got any container you want, you just score one side of the large, we call it a big dipper. The reason why we call it big dipper and little dipper is because we're double dipping. Because one side is, you know, large, one side is small. But you just simply trim the tray on one side and score it with a razor blade or clip it off just with a pair of needle nose. And then you just trim it to the size you want.
I didn't realize that was that design was a, fit to what you want. That's cool. Because that was my next question, because with those, they look really good, and I like the looks of them as far as being clean and the air transfer looks really, really good on those. The question I have is whenever you're a hobbyist like myself that doesn't produce a lot of eggs, you know, you don't need that big of container, but since you can trim them to fit, you know, that makes sense to me now, because I was thinking, wow, why didn't you make them for the 12-ounce, bellies again,
fit the 12-ounce. I mean, it's going to take you a couple of minutes. Like I told people, it's not like you're – but this is the only way I can do it without having to make 10 different trays. You know, everybody says,
exactly.
I wish you made a tray for this, a tray for that.
So
now you just trim them to wherever you want. In this hobby, we do a lot of things that are time-consuming. So it's going to be one of those things, you cut it once. The dishwasher safe. You're going to cut it once, you'll use it for a long time. You're never going to have to worry about it. But
take a guy like me, you know, my best egg production day has been 6 in one day, you know. So, I mean, I really don't need, you know, the 6-quart container size. But if you can trim them like that, that's great, you know, because I'm usually 2 eggs at a time. Maybe 4. Like I said, I've had one day with 6. Man, I felt like I had just hit the lottery, you know, 6 eggs in one day.
I've been there.
You know, so
those are the good old days.
I'm fixing to hit probably peak. I hadn't hit peak production yet, but there may be a few days that I get more eggs than that. But right now, you know, it's just a couple here and there. But But no, that's really great. I'm going to have to do that. I may have to shoot you an email and add some more to my order. So
I'll be posting the YouTube video tonight on how to use them. So we appreciate you calling in, and, yeah, look forward to seeing those emails from you.
That'll be good, buddy. Hey, thanks, guys, and I'm listening, so keep it up.
Thanks, Darryl.
All right, cool.
Bye-bye.
All right. Darryl's cool. He's a new hobbyist, doing really good. We've got a few more callers on the line for you. All right, let's go ahead and take caller from the 253 area code. You are live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, David, Sean, this is Elsa. How you doing?
Good,
Elsa.
How are you? Yep.
My question is, now, all these great products you've developed, do you recommend a particular incubator for them, or are you looking to maybe sometime develop your own incubator to work in conjunction with your superior products?
Great question.
That's a great question, actually. You know what? In order to design your own incubator or go that route, a Herbivator works just fine for $35-$40. It is top heat, so David could help you out with this. The FlexWatt heat tape I recommend, and just convert it to a bottom heat. And just like all of ours, Dave's probably got his own custom made. Majority of us just make our own, so to go out of our way to buy someone else's stuff, most of these are commercialized, and they're just not quite big enough, or they're not quite accurate. And the best stuff I've always had is always homemade, and I always tell my customers that, even on the internet, they say, hey, where can I buy a good incubator? I tell them, get some FlexWatt, get a thermostat or a dimmer switch. You can get that at Home Depot. They're $3. And hook it into that. And then when you hook it into that, you can just put a little thermostat or a little temperature gauge for $3. You can probably make one for, I'm willing to bet you can use a cooler or even a styrofoam box that you hot glue together. All these small things that are found in this hobby, the incubator that is best for you is going to be the one that is easy to use. So there's a lot of different kind of ones out there. I would just say try to make your own. That's the best way I can put it.
Yeah, and also when I was starting out, Herbivators work great. They're simple. You know, once you calibrate them, they stay pretty much where you're at unless your room temperatures fluctuate too crazy. But, you know, like Sean was saying, the next step up, you're going to want to think about possibly building your own, and there's so many different options. And if you get to that stage, just contact me. I'll be happy to help you. I just muted her because she gets a little bit of feedback on her line when she calls, and I want to have it on the show. But thank you, Elsa. All right, we have a couple
more
callers
here.
Thank you, Elsa. Yeah, call from the 360 area code. You're live on Gecko Nation Radio.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yep.
Yeah, can you hear you loud and clear?
Hey, this is Joe, and I was just wondering if the type of calcium you use, whether, you know, it's like added to the water, it's like liquid calcium, or powdered form of calcium will affect the development of the egg.
Interesting.
Did you want to take this one, Dave, or do you want me to?
No, this is all you, Sean.
Oh, okay. I've never used liquid calcium added to water because then they don't have a really – the way I was explained and shown how the animals will ingest it when needed. So if you don't give them really an option to ingest it when needed, then you're going to be forced – I would say, I guess, forcing them to ingest it through the water supplement. Never worked with it, so I can't really give you an honest opinion. I use osteoform calcium as recommended by Ron Tremper years ago to me, and I've used it ever since with Bionate to gut load my my bugs with. So I've been it has, and you got to make sure that you're using calcium carbonate. You're not. That's the it depends on what are you using for feed. Are you using crickets or mealworms?
I'm using mealworms and dubia roaches.
Dubias are good. They're high
okay.
in protein. So it's just like a human, the way I explain it. So people understand that. I'm not sure if you're familiar with the human breakdown. So protein in the human body can be used to be converted to anything. So, these electrolytes, these, sugars, carbohydrates. So the proteins in an animal work the same. So if they have a high protein diet, they can use those proteins and move those to the areas that are needed that are malnourished from these different vitamins or supplements. So I recommend a high protein, just like you're giving them. Crickets can be vitamin A deficient, which they are. So anybody who's on a cricket only diet, if you're listening, please gut load your crickets. It's very important because they're naturally vitamin A deficiency. And I actually have had a pet when I had it tested. I had a 13-year-old pet, and I had one crickets for years, and then I just Didn't quite keep an eye on that vitamin A deficiency, and he actually didn't make it. He died last year, a 13-year-old gecko. And the way I can explain it is make sure that you, make sure you gut load your insects. It's so important because in the wild, the cricket or the worm, it's going to go eat a little bit of fecal from a bird. It's going to go eat a little bit of plant. It's going to go eat a little bit of salt. It's going to go eat a little bit of this mineral. And then the gecko eats the insect. So you have to make sure that you're giving that insect those gut-loaded, you know, nutrients. That way the animal can ingest those nutrients. And I've been a strong believer in gut load. If anybody's ever been to a convention I've attended, they know that I tell everybody to use it. I'll even give it to them if they don't, you know, if they don't have it, because it's an essential part of their diet. And that's the husbandry of this hobby. It's not just buying an animal and then can I get some eggs. It's buying an animal, understanding the keeping and care of them. And I have a printable care sheet right on my website that, you know, that I have that you can print out, and it helps. I've got a new gecko owner kit on there, and it tells you all about the calcium supplement and a moist hide and things of these nature. And then we've even designed a video to be very user-friendly. So.
All right. Thank you. That's been really helpful.
Okay, Joe. Thanks for calling. Something I'd just add real quick, a lot of liquid calcium and adding calcium to water is usually more essential for birds and not for reptiles. So I wouldn't recommend doing that
heard
for
of
your reptiles.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I've never even heard of that before.
For geckos,
I wonder if there's D3 in it, because they can D3 overdose. I don't know if that's...
Right. And I would think that adding anything to the drinking water would kind of increase its rate of being contaminated or, you know, bacteria building up and... You know what I mean?
I don't know how much you need, too much, too little. Well, it's a good question. I'm glad that he called in and had that question, because you got the answer from a few people who are experienced, and I wouldn't have an honest opinion on it because I've never used it. But like you said, I just wouldn't use it. So.
Yeah, just play it safe, Joe. No calcium in the water. All right.
Thanks.
Well, let's take a break from the callers for a few minutes, and let's talk a little bit about the future of what you're doing, Sean. And I know everybody knows that your product was recently pirated, imitated, and you know you're the one that did the research. You're the one that has the experience, the enthusiasm, the intellect to know your product. You just spent over an hour telling us exactly, you know, everything you've done to all the research you've done and put into these products, and nobody can ever take that away from you. I mean, you know, business is business. It's cutthroat sometimes, and if you know, I'm not a fan of people that, you know, run their businesses by, you know, copying others. I mean, it's, you know, I think I give more respect to people that actually come up with the inventions. But, you know, going back to Thomas Edison's time, you know, him and Tesla had their own little thing going, and it's just, I don't know, it is what it is. It stinks. But you know what, it also makes us improve our product. Like, for instance, you could take FlexLot. FlexLot's been imitated for 30 years, but it's always been advanced to keep ahead of the competition. And that's what this situation is going to force you to do. It's going to keep you to advance your product and make it better, so you can always say, hey, this is better. I mean, I love being able to promote FlexLot because I know it's the better choice. You know, and I don't like the fact that the imitation is sometimes promoted as something that's more advanced or more better than FlexLot. Just isn't. And that stinks. I mean, when there's misleading stuff going on. But then again, there are products that are kind of neck and neck, and in those cases, it's basically up to you to decide. But, you know, enough about that, Sean. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what's going on in the future now? What are your plans for what you're doing?
I want to just brush by the trays real quick, the ones that we just released. This was actually a tray that was it was going to be a one-sided tray, and the one side was supposed to have 13 rows on it. And I told him I wanted it kind of made of a material that we can cut, because I don't want to have to – well, to tell you the truth, I told my grandfather. He's helped me design and create. I want to give him a personal, you know, thanks on all his help and designing and development of all the products. He's been there and helping me through the process of understanding the engineering of it. And I wanted to, you know, just publicly thank him for everything he's done. But next to that, I wanted to make sure that we could clip it. And we could size it, because I didn't want to ship containers. There's an extra cost there. There's very little, you know, there's very little profitability in container market. You can ask anybody who's just shipping supplies. So with that in mind, it's just going to add to the packaging when they could just cut it to the size they already have. They don't have to spend the extra money either. As hobbyists, this is not a cheap hobby. This is an expensive hobby.
No.
So any dime or dollar you can save is good. So I said, I want them to be able to trim it and cut it to whatever container they have, so that way they don't have to go out of their way to buy an additional container for $3-$4 or, you know, $20 just for an egg tray and a container, because that's what the original pricing point I wanted for these was. But as time went on, I said, you know what, let's try it. So when he sent me one, he sent it to me in a package, I flipped over and I said, what's this on the other side? And he says, well, that's the rail that we that the plastic goes through for the mold. I said, why can't you put one on each side, you know, about four squares apart? I said, then it can hold eggs on the other side. And he goes, well, dang, I didn't think of that. And 2 weeks later, I had a double-sided egg tray in my hand that worked for two different size eggs. So it was really
cool
to kind of use. It is cool. It's pure luck, actually, you know, to look down and go, wow, this will work for two-sided. And then egg suspension only has to be an inch or a centimeter. All has to happen is the eggs don't have to be touching their median. So it actually works perfectly fine. And a real quick education before I forget on using egg suspension. You know, Greg pioneered a part of this as well with his product. He did a very good job with it, and I've always said great things about it. And he's probably can understand some of the things I'm saying about why eggs get better, why there's better hatch ratios because there aren't those harmful elements. But you need to put a good amount of substrate in any container when using egg suspension because the heat pocket or the air pocket per se. Okay, let's think of Mother Earth as an example. How much room is there from the ground to the atmosphere? Then you got to think how much Earth is there from one side to the core. There's a lot more Earth than there is atmosphere, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
As
very
thin
atmosphere.
So the eggs, they're not halfway through the Earth. They're very, very close to the surface because that's where the female buries them. So therefore, your container should replicate that. And that's why I've used to basically design and develop all my products was back in the wild, how did it work? The eggs are only buried, you know, 3-4 inches under the soil, maybe that. So therefore, you should only have 3-4 inches of room between your eggs and the median. So that's why I've always told people, that's why the Little Dipper is designed the way it is, so you can't mess it up. I made it a specific height, so when you put a bearded dragon, chameleon, corn snake, monitor egg in there, it doesn't go any lower, so you can't affect your hatch ratios. I made it kind of foolproof a little bit. It's going to be 75% of the container, 65% of the container is going to have to be packed with median on purpose. So this is just a recommendation. When you're using the other size trays and you're using them with your products when you get home, please use a large amount of substrate and don't oversaturate because you don't need to. The baseball effect that we've always heard of in this hobby works well. You squeeze it, so the water all drains out, and then you can use it. And then set the tray right on top of the soil. You can push down a little bit and then just place your eggs. The other egg trays, that leopard gecko eggs tend to sometimes when they're first being laid, they tend to like roll a little bit. So if you just place the eggs to one side of the shelf on the left, then just tilt the container a little bit when you put it in the incubator and slowly set it down. The reason why we made them larger is because we know they're going to grow to this size. That's why we're redesigning the Geo is because these eggs, they get so big when you put them in these products because they're taking on excess nutrient hydration. So we want to make sure that we didn't have to redo it again. So that's why the rails are so large. And if you're concerned with this, it's as simple as putting a straw. I love straws because they're usually made of BPA-free, and they work very well, and they don't contaminate easy. So just place a straw on each side, and then place the egg in between the straws, and you're good to go.
Hey, Sean, let me ask you this. With my incubation method, I've been using the deli cups, and I always put a little pinhole in the side, and I was told, and from what I've learned, that it allows those gases to escape, and it's just a small little hole. It's not like a, you know, huge hole or anything. And do you recommend that in your with your system with the Geos and the Deli Cup combined?
Oh yeah, I can tell you, I've incubated eggs any way you can think of under any substrate and all temperatures. I mean, that's what's taken so long. It's taken so many years because I incubated it from 79 up to 93 last year. And that's why I got a lot of mails on my website that's just because I made sure that our products worked efficiently and didn't hinder the incubation process, but enhanced it. Using all my products, all forms of incubation, documenting the same exact stuff with the same water, the same exact environment, the closest I can get, using the same kind of females, obviously, that were coming up in the same year span from the same product. So all my stuff had to be consistent for me to be able to come on a radio station like this and try to introduce a new system of how to incubate eggs and try to educate people on how to do it. You want to make sure that you do it correctly. So, yes, one pinhole is what I use. Using a fast evaporation, the water is going to evaporate evacuating some of these gases out. I put it right in the top. I'm doing a test with a punched cup that you use to ship the gecko in or use it to show. They hatched out fine, mm-hmm. too. The more oxygen flow, it just means more evaporation. So if you're going to have a higher oxygen flow, which means more holes, you need to have a little bit more more hydration in the cup. And this is called relative humidity, which is found, okay, in your garden. If you water your garden, you ever notice on a windy day, sometimes your plants will wilt? It's because the wind caused relative humidity, which means that the plant transpired more gases. So this is actually a good thing. This is transpiration. This means that the egg basically absorbs the plasmas, which are, and this is actually a good topic I want to cover real quick. I won't spend long on it. When I first started doing the deal, I want to know why the egg got bigger. And why the egg got bigger, I tried to figure out, is there such good as good or bad evaporation? Good and bad evaporation, there is no such thing. You know, if you have a swamp and you have an island, the difference between the two would be what? If there's an egg hanging in each environment, what egg would be larger? Well, why is it that on this other side it would be larger, which is the geo, and then the other side it would be, it's basically smaller because of the dissolved oxygen. Dissolved oxygen is used by the medium. So if your medium is compacted, it's got bacteria in it, and it's inconsistent, and it expires before the term of the incubation period is over, this will cause what we call dissolved oxygen. This can be measured with a meter. So if you have the other hand, which you have a good bioactive medium that's not in decomposition, it will actually help with the oxygen level inside the cup, allowing it to be a better environment, allowing the egg to take on more hydration. So it doesn't have a dissolved oxygen issue either. So it's called relative humidity, better transpiration, more absorption of the hydration in the environment. So an extra air hole or two ain't going to hurt it. Just make sure the medium's more hydrated.
And I'd like to just run back to a quick point, and we have another caller on the line, by the way. I just want to go back to a quick point about the female laying her eggs. Now you made a good point about how she's only going to lay them like 3 inches down, and in nature, if she laid them any deeper than that, the babies would have a hard time hatching out and breaking free to the surface, I would expect. We're doing the right thing when we're using, you know, these Ziploc containers, so to speak. A lot of us use the BPA-free Ziplocs. And my next question to you, Sean, is now I'm going to be trying out your layback substrate, which is called the RectiGrow, right? And I'm going to be trying out the stones in there now, which you're going to talk a little bit about, I think. But now how many stones would you put in the standard Ziploc container laybox?
Well, how we use RectiGrow is I recommend using a Ziploc bag. Pour 2 bottles of water in there. That way, if you don't use all the medium, you can leave it in a Ziploc bag so it doesn't get contaminated by the environment, because you're going to have, in a facility, you know, there's what I call gecko dust. So you want to make sure you keep that in a Ziploc bag. That's what I do with my stuff. And then you pull it out, and then you can throw it in the nest box, and you can fill up the Ziploc bag again, so that way it keeps the expiration pretty good. So if you, because you're going to use it more often than not. And then what I like to use is, I use the word by volume. We use like a 3.5-inch deli cup inside of our water dishes, and I always use disposable water dishes. So I just put that little deli cup in there. I snap the lid on. I pour the water in. That little deli cup, or not deli cup, but portion cup, excuse me. The portion cup right there, about 3.5 ounces by volume. So you're going to fill that up to 1 brick of RectiGrow. It seems to keep the soil. All we're going to do with these stones is basically keep the soil neutral through the use, elongating the expiration. That's all we're going to try to do.
Right.
And in return, these stones, they have certain attributes to them that are really good. And we use organic, like I said, we use that organic solution that are with minerals in it that actually help keep the expiration of the medium longer, too. And these stones just basically create a balance. They're the same exact thing that's kind of found in kitty litter. So I won't recommend going home and grabbing a scoopful of kitty litter and throwing it in your nest box. But if you were to look at like a carbon filter from your refrigerator, there's the black stones and then there's the white stones. Those stones are a family of stones that are used for different forms of mediums, industries. So in this case, we're just going to use them to try to regulate the bacteria properties of the medium. We're going to try to regulate it by using these stones to kind of be like little managers of their area. So it'll help aerate the soil as well. They hold about 50% of their weight in water as well, so it'll actually help keep it hydrated. It'll help keep the soil aerated. That way oxygen flow will help with reducing the bacteria growth within the medium. And I've noticed that these stones actually have a, a, a caution. So basically most medians, they call it fertility or they call it the pH. There's also another name that they use to measure soils. It's called CEC, caution exchange captivity. So basically soil is measured by how much nutrients or minerals they can absorb and hold on to or give off to a plant or living organism. So it's called a CEC rating. So you want to keep that at an optimal level too. And that's what these stones will help do. They'll help regulate. Those help regulate the median, and they'll actually absorb. Mm-hmm. What we're trying to do is keep those stones in there because they're going to absorb that natural element that the female, when she laid her egg, she's going to lay her eggs. Those stones are going to hit it. They're going to pull it in. They're going to hold on to it. And then when it dries, they're going to hold on to that, and they're going to hold on to it. And then the egg's going to sit on those for a couple of, hopefully a day or two, and it's going to continue to give it that nutrient that it needs during those first stages. And then basically when you remove the eggs, the balance of the box will still stay intact, and those stones will retain that special, the ooze. They'll retain the chemicals or, you know, the fertilizers from those ooze and hold on to them and help regulate that nesting area, neutralizing it. When that fluid was tested, it tested like a form of lime mineral as well, so it works as lime minerals do. They work to neutralize. So it neutralized the zone. The eggs were laid. Then it dried. When it dried, it dried as a form of mineral, and that mineral gives the eggs fertilizer while they incubate. And this is absolutely true. If you test the soils like I did, if you have a neutral soil, you'll see these trace minerals in there from these females, and you'll understand more of the process. Or just take my word for it, one of the two, right?
I'll tell you, you know what, Sean? It's a lot to absorb at one time, and I'll be honest with you. I'm going to listen to this episode a few times because, you know what, the people that are going to listen to you and the people that are going to grasp, you know, attempt to grasp this process and actually take the steps to grasp it are the ones that are going to succeed and have better hatch rates. That's what it is. There's a lot of people out there that want fast, quick information. They don't want to really study. They don't want to do their homework. They don't want to, you know, spend the time. And those are the people that are not going to, you know, they're not going to have the better rates and the better, you know, better success rates and stuff. So,
I guarantee it. That's the best part. If you want to, it's not necessarily about keeping your hatch rates. It's about not, it's kind of, how can I put this? It's kind of strong by saying this, but it's about not, if you don't take care of the embryos right, you're going to kill them. You know,
right.
And people are just like,
that's
well,
it.
you're going to increase hatch ratios all over the board. That, you know, you're going to cause an increase in the marketplace because there'll be more geckos hatching and this is not good for everybody. But, you know, that's a living thing. You know, if you don't do what's right, you got to make a difference. And I just hope that people, what I can say is that you heard it here first. You know, it's my research, and people keep saying, what research? Well, do some of yourself. Go grab vermiculite, go buy a bag of peat moss, go buy a bag of this, and then test it after 30 days and tell me what you find. Go grab my Proctor, I'll give you some, and then test it.
Yeah, nobody can take it away from you that you haven't done your research. That's just it. I mean, you would not be able to talk about
it. But other people can use it to benefit themselves. That's my only fear is that, after I've done all this and I've spoken about it publicly, and I've actually sent out tips to 15 of the largest breeders in the U.S. and outside the U.S. as well, the research that's out there might be used to benefit other products, and that's my only fear is that this is taking a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money, and just trying to develop these products, not just for myself, but for the hobby. I mean, now someone could have the same exact success and not have to go through, why did this die? Why did this happen? By removing some of these issues underlie by just education and the right product. So buy a brick of RepTiGrow, put it in your nest box, change it after 60 to 90 days. You'll be able to tell by looking at the median. And then after that, actually I would say 90 days is expiration on our product. So after 90 days you can replace it, and then you put the eggs in the geo and they'll hatch as long as they're fertile. Mm-hmm. If you're having fertility issues, if you're having over-easy where you find an egg that isn't quite right, it's usually supplementation. And I found that through our bug food. I mean, I've been redesigning bug food every single year, adding something to it or changing something about it to make sure that it's in line with whatever, you know, whatever gives me the best result. So I would have to say that if you're listening and you're trying to get new into the hobby, just do yourself a favor. Talk to the person you're buying your pets from or you're purchasing your pets from. Get online, read some information. It's not just about having a cool pair of lizards and you're going to make money on them. It's about providing them with the best care and husbandry and tools that you can to do it correctly. And that's all I can pass on, because at this point in time, as far as we are, we've got, I want to make a promise to the hobby, people who are listening to, for the next years to come, I'm working on multiple products right now. eight to be exact, that are hopefully will be released over the next 4 months, for the next years to come. And what this is going to do, this is going to allow us to continually keep you in mind of the education. So this is phase one. Phase two should come hopefully in August, and then phase three. And we'll just continue to keep products coming for you to make it easier for you to enjoy the hobby. And that's, you know, that's what we're going to try to do here. And I'll just brush by real quick. I am a gecko breeder as well, a leopard gecko breeder, and we've been working on a lot of our projects for many years now.
Hey, Sean, don't feel like you're rushed. We can go into overtime. So it's not going to be live.
It's not going to
be live, but it'll be recorded. It'll still be, you know, in the episode. So go ahead. Just do your thing.
Good, yeah. Yeah, we've been working on a lot of our projects. There's a couple people who had influenced that, you know, quite a bit as I went along. And, you know, those people like Ron Tremper, Gail Wood Jr. and Sr. over there at JMG, they helped out quite a bit. And Nate from Sin City Gecko, he's a great guy, too. He's an erect Dallas species. And I inherited a lot of my my collection from Nate and worked on his bloodlines after he was kind of finished with leopard geckos as far as his tangerines go. And we found a couple really cool traits. They're not new morphs, but they're traits. And traits are found as like banding in a certain direction or a certain jungle marking on the tail that's a circle instead of a stripe or a head pattern that's consistent no matter what you outcross it to. There's a couple Facebook pictures, photos that I post. I'm not really a Facebook junkie, so I don't post a lot of photos. Plus, if I only have one of them, I don't want to post a picture because if they buy it, then I'm out of that one. So trying to build up a small collection of individual traits that separated us from the rest. And we have a lot of cool leopard gecko morphs that we've been working on for a long period of time. And I want you guys to keep an eye out for those. We got a really cool yellowbill project I've been working on for a long time, since 07. I inherited those. I was actually after – a lot of people had orange albinos. And I noticed that the bell albino line had a lot of yellow in it. And I came across a pair of what they called hibinos at the time, and I got them from a gentleman called I forgot his name now, but his website was Leopard Gecko Punk, and this is for quite a few years back, and he had two really super yellow hibinos, and I was like, you know what, I think I'm going to get a pair of those. So I got them from him, and then I talked to another guy, BM Reptiles. He was Devon. He was gecko formed years ago, back in 07 and 08. He was pretty popular, and I actually got a male from him that was really yellow, and I've been line breeding since 07, and now we call them our yellow bells, and they're actually just about ready. We got a pretty cool line of those, about 75% keratin, and they're very yellow, and we actually crossed those to another trait that I think is going to be like a newer snow gene. It works as a dominant, and it's going to be kind of cleans everything up, wipes it out, works as like a super hypo trait, and those should be pretty cool. So we got some really nice stuff coming. Everybody's asking me about that purple gecko that I've posted pictures of. It's a stripe complex. We call it a Spyro because of the game character, that dragon Spyro. So we call him Spyro Stripes because he has a stripe complex. He hatched out fully like that later. He actually turned like a yellowish color, but he kept that nice stripe look to him. And what we do is I tried him last year, and he didn't prove out to be codominant or dominant. So then I raised up all of his babies, and then this year they bred. And then this year I'll find out if it's recessive. I actually have eggs cooking. I've been rushing out here every morning to see if I even wrote right on the cup, Mother Nature, please bring me a purple gecko.
A picture is worth 1,000 words. You can't just tell us about these awesome geckos and not post them in the Gecko Nation group. So you better spend at least a couple minutes showing and throw us some pictures, okay? Maybe tomorrow?
I'll post them to Facebook, yeah. I'll post them to Facebook tonight. And I wasn't going to, and I got a couple of really cool tangerine projects. Everybody's got their own. We found like a nice green trait to them. We got a couple projects like that. So just keep an eye out. I mean, I know it's tough. We got a really cool project that works with the bold stripe, jungle stripe, carrot head, carrot tail, snow, head raptor giant. Basically, it's one of every trait. Trying to work on those for a while, too. So Facebook me. If you have any questions, I do have a couple from an older project, a few males that will influence them, but as all new morphs come, you know, no one, as I've started to realize that $3,000 gecko that you start to hunt 8 years ago don't exist anymore. I think you remember that too, Dave, when we all looked at these new codominants and dominants, and I was the one out there spending the $1,500 on them, and now it comes time, and the market isn't quite what it used to be as far as the higher end stuff, but I'm hoping to increase that. You know, I think there's a lot of people who've done a really good job with keeping the leopard gecko market. You know, you spend 5, 6, 7, 8 years on a project, you should be able to get, you know, a good amount for them. They do it in the ball python community. So I think the gecko community, we can do it as well. A lot of these animals, you know, the white and yellow stuff is really pretty. I've been into the white and yellow stuff for quite a long time. I actually got lucky. I found a white and yellow no het from Jeff. I brought it into my collection 4 years ago, and now we got a lot of really nice white and yellow no hets that are coming out looking pretty nice. And got some white and yellow Montana snows. Got some white and yellow wildcats. Those are pretty cool. Those are all F4s. And it's kind of tough just to look at the bins and see what all we have over there. I told you a little bit about that, and just keep an eye out for some of those. Hopefully I'll be able to reach some of the projects next year, but you get greedy, as you know, Dave. When you get three or four that look a certain way, you want to hold on to them. You know, I don't want to sell
them. Oh, my gosh.
If I sell them, then I'll lose them, and I don't have that genetic fielding anymore. And I've done that, you know, where you sell a certain female or male, and you're like, man, I can't believe I did that. I only had two of them, and I sold one, and now that's how our solar eclipse project worked. I sold a lot of the double het, and I look back, and I go, wait a minute here, you know. I kept the homozygous, but there's only two of them. So it took me another 3 years to get the double head back up to where I was. I was like, man, I wish I wouldn't have done that. It takes a little longer.
I've made mistakes,
those
too.
Are pure...
We all do.
Yeah. So, yeah, well, I appreciate everybody listening. If you have any questions, please, you can Facebook me or you can send an email to the website. If you have any questions regarding specific to the incubation or the products or the use of them, let me know. Just to give you guys an update, we are working currently with another geo. We're going to try to make it a little bit different design, and hopefully it'll show the difference in the results. That's going to be the difference in all these products, is the results you receive when using them. And we'll increase your hatch
That's
ratios,
cool.
maybe, depends on how you use them.
Mm-hmm.
But at least you're going to have better
yep.
nest box medium. That's the way I look at it.
And just so everybody knows, I'm going to be working directly with Sean to learn his products very well, and we're going to have Sean back on August 27th, and by that time, I should have some of my own results using his products. So we'll do a full update episode then. And Sean, very, very good information tonight. I don't think anybody's going to be able to top this incubation episode as far as information. You really nailed it. We're going to have to listen to it a couple times to really get it. And like I was saying earlier, those of you guys out there that do listen to this and get it, it'll help you. This is the information. In fact, all of our episodes are geared to help you in this. So that's what we do. We want to help the community. So, yeah. So thank you, Sean. Thank you for all that you're doing. Thank you for the heart and the enthusiasm that you're putting into your inventions. Nobody can take that away from you. And I look forward to our next talk for sure.
Absolutely, Dave. I appreciate you having me on the show. And thanks again for everything.
Absolutely. Cool. All right, Sean, I'll be in touch with you soon. In fact, I may want to grab one of those head-free white and yellows if you have any available.
Yeah, absolutely.
Awesome. All right,
absolutely.
Dave, thanks again. I'll talk to you during the week then.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon, Dave. Thank you, everybody, for listening.
All right. Take care, Sean.
Have a good night.
Good night. All right, everybody. Great show. Awesome information. Before I play the outro and everything, and I'm gonna come back with my actually you know what I'm gonna play the outro and then I'm gonna come back with my closing remarks and then I'm gonna give each one of our sponsors an awesome I'm not gonna play a plug, but I'm just gonna tell you about them because they're just great. So check this out, folks.
Gecko Nation Radio is a David Fine Gecko's creation and production. You can visit the show's Facebook page at Gecko Nation Radio. I also have a great family-friendly group on Facebook called Gecko Nation. Apply for membership today. The jazz music you heard tonight was generously donated and created by Jeremy Turgeon of J&D Reptiles. Thank you very much, Jeremy, for the great musical pieces. You can check out Jeremy at J&D Reptiles on YouTube and on Facebook. And a very special thank you to our news anchor, graphic designer, and audio tech, Steve Barker. All the graphics, audio sponsor plugs, and music overlays were assembled by Steve. Check out Steve on YouTube at BC Barker Creations. He has some terrific videos for the herp community with amazing geckos and snakes.
Please support the U.S. Herp Horticultural Alliance and USARC. Gecko Nation Radio is proud to support both of these organizations. Please donate to USARC so that they have the funds needed to legally protect pet owners' rights nationwide. You can donate to the USARC Legal Defense Fund at www.usarc.org. If you would also like to learn
about advocacy and how you can take action on a state and local level, please subscribe to the U.S. Herpetocultural Alliance newsletter and blog at www.usherp.org.
Okay, everybody. Well, my closing remarks are this. You know, where we spend our money today is one of the things that we still have control of. You know, I believe the direction we send it should be our vote, more or less, on where we feel it will do the most good. That's why I seek out the better businesses and the better people in the industry. Business out there is cutthroat. In order to make any business big, you will need to do things that don't really jive with positivity and like a Zen lifestyle. I mean, it's just how it is. The system we are locked in forces us to be competitive and do things that undermine our morals and integrity sometimes. And, you know, that's not for me. That's not how I do things. You know, many great inventions have been, you know, blatantly copied and suppressed or just plain shelved because of behind-the-scenes feuds and corporate greed. You know, the reptile industry is probably going to be no different if it keeps growing and getting bigger. But there's a flip side to it, because as the industry grows, we become more powerful, and the likelihood of it being taken away from us decreases, because in the end, it's all about the money. You know, keeping a business afloat is about making profits, and businesses that struggle will do some things to keep those profits coming in. You know, it's not for the faint of heart. It's a, you know, competing in business, it's a game, and, you know, the winner of the game will not always be the nicest person or the person, you know, or the person with the most moral character. And they may have started out that way, though. And the winner will be the one that is the most business hardy and willing to do whatever it takes to win the game. And I believe, though, that when living animals are involved, it changes the playing field dramatically. And all kinds of feelings and emotions get wrapped up into it. And that's where a lot of the drama and strife can come, especially in the animal community, animal world. It's because, you know, big profits have only recently started coming into play, I think. And, you know, it is what it is, everyone. And, you know, you guys are out there to make your own choices and your own opinions on different things. And I'm going to do what I feel is best, and I'm going to stick with the people that I feel are the best in this. All right? And things that you're going to hear on that on my show are, you know, people and products and businesses that you're going to hear on this show are people and businesses that I feel are the best. So I just want to thank everybody for making Gecko Nation Radio the big success that it is. We are global now, and the show is huge, and it's just incredible. I want to thank you all. I never in a million years would have thought it would get this big. Next week we have the Caloric FlexWatt show, so I hope you guys can tune in. We're going to talk about FlexWatt heat tape, all about its history, and what makes it the best choice and the safest choice and the most energy-efficient choice for our reptile rooms. And basically, the reptile industry wouldn't be what it is without FlexWatt. It's the one product that has helped all the big breeders all along up until now, and still continues to help all the big breeders that are supporting that product. And we definitely have the best breeders on our side with FlexWatt. So thanks, everybody. I will see you next time. And before we go, I just want to tell you about our amazing sponsors, and I'm not going to play a plug because I could tell you about them. They're just awesome. Number one, Dale's Bearded Dragons. Mario and Dale Delator have been sticking by my idea for radio since the very beginning. Dale's Bearded Dragons is the biggest supplier of reptile supplies at most of the Northeast Expos. Not only are they just a great family-run business, but they're just good people. And their website is being overhauled. Their business is growing so well now that they're actually updating their website. They do a lot of stuff on Amazon, okay? So you can check out www.dalesbeardeddragons.com. And with Dale's Bearded Dragons, if you're going to any of the expos in the Northeast that they're at, mention Gecko Nation Radio, you're going to get a 10% discount, all right? And if you buy any geckos from me at any of the shows, you're going to get a discount on anything from them. That's how it works. We work together on stuff like that. So second, AB Dragons, abdragons.com, run by Reno Lucarelli. The best supplier for Duvia roaches, hands down. He's got the cleanest collection, excellent roaches, and he's now selling FlexWatt. He's a big distributor of FlexWatt heat tape.
FlexWatt's doing very well with him. And definitely check out his pricing. I know he does, like, free shipping. And you can use the term, the code word GECKO, all in caps, at checkout for 5% off your order. All right, that's with amydragons.com. Next, MS2 Premium Chow, Miss Marcy and her lovely roach chow. Everybody loves it. All right. It's sold at Rainbow Mealworms and a few other places. You can check out MS2 at ms2.ent at weebly.com. Mr. John Scarborough of Gecko Boa Reptiles. Gotta love John. He's on to some awesome, awesome projects, and he is the king of the wild types in the U.S. So check out Gecko Boa. Reptiles.com and on Facebook. And next, Wally Kern of Supreme Gecko. Wally's got great geckos. He's really big into Cresties, micro geckos, and he's got a big presence online. Does a lot of good things giving back to the community. He's been doing a nice thing where he basically gives some exposure to new hobbyists, and you guys can submit your choices who you think would be a good person for him to give some exposure to. Definitely check out SupremeGecko.com. Reptiles Express. Reptiles Express is the hands-down best reptile shipping company. They have the best rates and the best customer service. And I've been using Reptiles Express ever since I started, and I'll never change. And you got to love Debbie. Debbie is the customer service representative. Check out ReptilesExpress.com online, and they're on Facebook too. Ohio Gecko. OhioGecko.com. Thad has orange all over the place. His geckos are so orange. They're amazing. Just beautiful, beautiful orange geckos. And he's got some awesome fat tails and other stuff that he's working on. So he's also the owner of geckoforums.net. And if you guys want to get your gecko fix, that's the place besides Facebook. See, you know, Facebook is stealing a lot of action because of its ease of use, but now you can log into the gecko forums with your Facebook account. So you can get that history. A lot of things get lost on Facebook. Like, you ask a question about geckos or reptiles, and within 10 minutes, it's down in a thread in some group, and you'll never find it again. But you go to the gecko forums, you type in what you want, you're going to get history going back to 2006, I believe. So, you know, you're going to see everything. You're going to see the beginnings of these morphs. You're going to see drama. You're going to see all kinds of stuff related to whatever you type in to do a search of. So definitely check out gecko forums. We recently brought on Ron Trimper, the king, the godfather of leopard geckos. You got to love Ron, and congratulations to Ron. He's just getting married now, and he's creating a husband and wife reptile super power couple that's going to basically take over the world and make sure geckos are in everybody's households. Just want to wish you guys both the best of everything. Very happy for you, too. Rainbow Mealworms. We love Jillian. Jillian Spence is just amazing. She is just a great person to deal with. Rainbow Mealworms has some of the best worms in town. They're the biggest worm grower in the world. I use them exclusively for my collection. Check them out at rainbowmealworms.net. And stay in the Gecko Nation group. I'm going to announce a special promo code for tonight. Okay? We're going to be Rainbow Mealworms is giving us a special promo code for you guys to use. Join the group, Gecko Nation. I'm going to put all the information in there tonight, right after I get off the air now. All right, you guys will be able to use that for a while. And I want to thank Jillian for that. Thank you, Jillian. And our newest sponsor, and I'm very happy to have Keith Kiggins of GiantLeopardGecko.com. He specializes in giant and super giant leopard geckos, as you might expect. And he focuses on selectively bred exceptional lions. And got a lot of experience, too. Keith's got over 17 years in this. So you guys can check him out, GiantLeopardGecko.com, on the web and on Facebook. All right. And that's it, folks. I just want to thank you all again for making the show so great, and I will see you next week. Take care. Have a good night.